Blog Talk Radio.
The following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
And this is the last word. This is May the 9th, 2014. And the truth shall set you free. We just heard the truth sung by His Eminence Pavarotti, and that's what that means, the truth. But don't think because someone is explaining something to you that they're telling you the truth. Just because the Republicans are going to have another witch hunt about Benghazi, that don't make it better. I mean, how many witch hunts do you need to tell you that there is no there? How many?
It's like a repeal of Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, they had 51. We're not going to have 51 Benghazi investigations, are we?
Never underestimate a Republican.
I mean, this has got to be.
If anything, they're obsessive. You know, come on.
Well, you know what they say about doing the same thing over and 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 over again.
Yes.
Maybe you'll get it right sometime. Or is it you're just nuts?
I think we've answered that question conclusively. But
what's the story here?
Yeah,
I mean,
look, this whole thing, what this story is, has nothing to do with Benghazi anymore. This is 110% Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton. Where do I know that name from? Well, where do I know Hillary Clinton from? Well, what is Hillary Clinton? Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. Where do I know that name from?
Here's another name that you may have heard of. They wheeled out this week. I was been waiting for it for months and months and months, and here it came, trundling out onto the stage, Monica Lewinsky. Back yet
again.
Because you know they're desperately afraid of the Clintons, and they gotta stop that train barreling away from the station. So they are trying everything they can to tarnish her record or anything to do with it.
Well, just listen to what young man from MSNBC asked of Mr. Bona yesterday.
When is the administration going to tell the American people the truth? They've not told them the truth about Benghazi. They've not told the truth about the IRS. They've not told the truth about Fast and Furious. Now, only one would have to guess. If they're not willing to tell the American people the truth, it must not be very pretty.
It's not going to be very pretty.
Wow.
So what the hell does that mean?
Where was the illustrious truth when we were wheeling out the aluminum tubes at the UN saying, mass destruction, mushroom clouds over American cities. We must kill Saddam now.
You mean there was no...
He flew, you know, with his secret agents.
You mean there was no mushroom clouds over the city? There was no mushroom clouds over the city?
We might have an investigation or 10 about that.
I don't understand that. Well, but I thought that when Mr. Bona... Well, let's listen to the question that was asked him by Luke Russett.
Four Americans died in Benghazi. Should the NRCC fundraise off of your efforts with the Select Committee?
Our focus is on getting the answers to those families who lost their loved ones, period.
But should the NRCC, they're fundraising off of it right now. Is that a wise thing to do?
Our focus is getting the truth for these four families and for the American people.
But the campaign committee, which you are very involved in, is fundraising off of this. Why is that happening?
Our focus is on getting the truth for the American people and these four families.
Please stay on the talking point. Please quit interrupting me with facts.
Does he not understand the question? Does he not understand the question?
It's all politics. There's absolutely no investigation going on. It's all about fundraising, ginning up things. Next, you'll see something about abortion. Next, you'll see something about when Hillary goes in. They've already said it. If you noticed, back about 2 weeks ago, the radio talk show hosts What's that guy's name? And they have been saying things like, "We're going to be seeing lesbian embraces with Hillary rolling around on the Oval Office," things like this. You know, because they are trying to gin up the hate base. You know.
Which is
why one of my favorite memes on Facebook right now has been the. They said, "Wait for it." They have the election day in 2016, the day that all racists in America turn into sexists.
Oh,
Hillary gets elected.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just...
Well, it's the same stuff. I mean, come on. They're just ginning up their base. And unfortunately...
Ginning up the base. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't even have any gin. That's the problem.
Yeah.
If you're going to gin up with some freaking gin.
Let's gin up the base with prohibition.
I mean, come on, give me a break. I don't understand this. I really do not understand this whatsoever. We have, well, let's just listen to the question that was asked of Hillary Clinton.
The new investigation. Are you satisfied with the answers, and are you content with what you know what happened?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, there are a lot of reasons why, despite all of the hearings, all of the information that's been provided, some choose not to be satisfied and choose to continue to move forward. That's their choice, and I do not believe there is any reason for it to continue in this way, but they get to call the shots in the Congress.
Now here's a problem with me. Are they actually saying, now, maybe I'm wrong, are they actually saying that the other 8 hearings they had on Benghazi, 8 hearings they had on the IRS, the other 8 hearings they had on Fast and Furious, that they were worthless because they turned up nothing? Just, nobody's indicted?
Just to bring it up, you're actually incorrect. They've now had 13 official hearings. They've had more than 50 briefings. And they produced more than 25,000 pages of official documentation on this. It's been run through the ringer. And we've said this before, but end of the day, no matter what happened, didn't happen, and all that, we'll never be able to actually investigate it and actually talk about it because, just like what's going on, did you hear the latest news?
Okay.
You know. In Nigeria right now,
yeah,
with the kidnappings on this. Well, now it turns out that that group is a CIA front, and it's running out of a forward operating base that we have in northern Nigeria.
So
now they're like, quit investigating, quit shut up about it.
So
just like that, in Libya, you can't investigate Benghazi in truth unless you turn that rock over. And that rock is like, has the little letter CIA on the bottom of it.
So you're saying that that's the reason why Hillary Clinton did not send in and didn't ask for a major troops 3 years ago when everybody was screaming, do something about it, do something about it.
Well, there's two sides to that. One, no one was screaming, do something about it. What they were doing.
Well, the Republicans saying, we were screaming it all along, do something about it, something about it.
And the truth of the matter is they were slashing the budgets for base security everywhere.
That's right.
And all the embassies. So they had withdrawn all that support to begin with. So that's why they were underfunded, under-supported. But you have two different things going on. They're the send in a few more official guards to stand at the gate of the embassy and check IDs. And then there's an entire operation that's black, that's under the table, that doesn't exist, and they have their own armies and their own protocols. And it doesn't matter what you send in, that doesn't affect that.
Well,
and, you know, we were in the middle of a, what was that quaint term? The Arab Spring. Ah, the Arab Spring. Where a strange Twitter flood overtook the entire Middle East. And our fantastic, world-famous insurgency spawning CIA operations had nothing to do with it and were never involved in toppling any of these governments.
Well, here's the thing. We're wondering why. And as Pavarotti sang, to open up the story, the truth. The truth is that the ambassador, who for a long time was the darling of Africa, in the woods, was running a CIA clandestine operation, and that's the reason why they did not want to point any major troops or guards at that site. It was not an embassy. It was not an embassy. It was a station. And
this
what comes in front of station? CIA.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, Ambassador or Secretary Rice, the one who is on the hook and in trouble because she was the spokesperson for the State Department that went on the TV shows.
Right.
That the reason they're in trouble and the reason there's even an investigation, the whole gist of it is that they said, well, in the shows you said that it was a spontaneous riots by the crowd and everything else. And then it turns out to be an organized attack. Who's lying? Who's covering up, right? The talking points that she had were not provided by Obama. They weren't typed up by Hillary Clinton. They were
listen,
from
by who?
The CIA.
Oh, she was, why would the CIA be taking over something from the State Department?
Because it was their base. And so when something happened on their base, they said, here is the reply. And they gave it to her. And she got the reply, and it was literally the talking points. And then they later revised the talking
points. Are you trying to say that the American public is too stupid to see that?
No, they're not stupid at all. Everybody in the American public's moved on, but the fundraising arm of the Republican Party has not. Just like they're endlessly repealing on a weekly basis Obamacare, they're also trying to gin up more Benghazi. But nobody.
Well, but see, you're letting them off lightly. The American public is too stupid to realize it, or else they wouldn't be listening to the same garbage every single day. They are too stupid to understand. That's the same reason why they're too stupid and don't go out and vote and get screwed when they don't vote. I'm talking about Charlotte, North Carolina, Mecklenburg County. We had such a stupid, idiotic, unbelievable races. We had people coming back from the dead. We had people who were dead who were running. I mean, it's when are they going to learn? You can't bring back the past.
Yeah.
And you can't have the past go into the future. And you can't have every Tom, Dick, and Harry run in an election. Because every Tom, Dick, and Harry is not suited to be an elected official. Yes, this is the United States of America, and everybody has the right to run. But just like the old thing, you have the right to facts, but not just your facts. And we have people who run for office who should never be in public service. They're nice. They're grandparents. They're mothers and fathers. They're not married. They're single people, men and women. But they're just not good enough. They don't have the right perspective. They don't have the right temperament to be in charge for more than 600 or 700,000 people. They do not. And until we understand that, here in the South, until we understand that, here in the South, we will get Joe Blow and Jane Doe running for office who should not be in public service. And the problem is they get all their cousins and friends to vote for them. And because nobody votes here, they win.
Right.
Now, I don't know. You know, hey, I'm not against Joe, and I'm not against Jane running. But you know what? What did Clint Eastwood say? Man's got to know his limitations. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Man's got to know his limitations. You need to know, just because you think you can, that don't mean you can. And we have people in office today who should not be dog catcher.
Speaking of dogs, our man Clint also said, watch out where the dog, yeah.
Right.
You know?
I mean, this is...
A lot of things can happen to you. You can be stepped on and smeared, or you can... dry up and blow away.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. It's just so freaking unbelievable.
Well, look, this is why, like, they have a couple of scandals to work with. They use the IRS. You know, recently they even linked the IRS to Benghazi somehow, some weird, you know, it's all the evil machinations of Obama, you know, targeting, probably using the same illegal, you know, Benghazi tactics on Republican groups here. And they've also got, you know, health care. I think they flogged health care to death so hard last year. They were just whipping on that thing, trying to get it to not fully implement and in time for the sign-up dates to show, you know, the 18 million people signed up. So when that failed, and it was wildly successful, and now the numbers are going up, everybody is going, hey, guess what? I actually saved money. This is great. Now that all that has happened, I think they have shifted back to Benghazi. That's why you remember before that, a year ago, we were talking about Benghazi. Then we went through Obamacare until it wore itself out, and people just started laughing in their face, saying, the 50th vote, really? You know. And then now they go, okay, back to Benghazi. And then after this, they'll go back.
What happened to Obamacare?
All right. But I'm saying it's just – it's a – worn out at the moment.
Or is it worn out, or is it because there are over 9 million people in the exchanges, 4 million in Medicare, and 4 million young people have signed up?
Oh, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, look, the numbers are up. The thing succeeded. It went through. You know, they did everything they could to drag and weigh it down and tear it down and, you know, make fun of the website and all. But, you know, it launched. It's good. It's working. People are saving money. People have coverage. We have millions more with coverage now than before. And so now people started, like, you know, laughing at them when they kept the Obamacare.
Speaking about laughing.
Now they're going back to Benghazi. But that's the only thing they got on Hillary is the problem, because Hillary's going to run next. So they've got to focus on Hillary. So it's all going to be – that's why they wheeled out Monica Lewinsky. It's all going to be sex and scandals and lying and she's untrustworthy. And
but,
you know,
but that wasn't Hillary.
No, but they don't. It's still, they're trying desperately to smear her with something. You remember she was a very effective Secretary of State, and they don't have any dirt, so they're trying desperately. But that's what I'm telling you. The next word, you know how this always works. It's going to be anti-gay, you know, anti-abortion, anti-God, you know, type rhetoric going on. That everything is she is the evil that's going to come and destroy. You know, she's going to come in the middle of the night with the satanic Bible
of the West
and steal your children and turn them into gays. I mean, that's the basic story.
Well,
then she's going to make the gays sign up for Obamacare under a gun.
Now, yeah, here's the other thing that kills me. I mean, come on. We have like 15 million people that have signed up. They don't believe those figures because those figures were cooked. And then you get the moron who's the governor of Texas state yesterday, and I don't have a clip of it, but I'm going to tell you exactly what it says. He said, health care is not working. We have over 90 million people that don't have health care in the country. 90 million! 90 million! Of all the people in this country, 90 million! Okay? One quarter, I should say. So now, this is another oops moment, because it's only 9.8 million. He said 90 million.
Well, you know, this is the guy who can't even remember his 3 points.
And it's only 3 points, and he was counting on his fingers.
He
says it was.
I'm
going to
eliminate three agents.
And he put up
points.
And he used his fingers like Blake does. Blake don't even use his fingers when he counts to three. Blake, and he's 5 years old. He was using his fingers counting them. Number two, and whoops. It's all, they brought five of the major insurance companies up to Capitol Hill. And they closed down the question as soon as they asked the question. When they asked the five insurance companies, how is the government takeover of health care hurting your insurance firm? And they said, there's no government takeover of health care.
Yeah. What are you even talking about?
We don't even talk to them.
Yep.
They said, okay. And they went down the line. And all three of them said the same thing. They said, okay, this meeting is coming to an end. I mean, would you kid me?
Look,
these guys are bringing it. There were 45 million people out there who were not insured. And now these people are getting people just stuck. And The rates have not gone up. I mean, this is just completely, completely bogus.
Yeah, but look, this is these people are so hell-bent on doing anything possible. I mean, they've stopped every, you know, we've had no jobs bill. We've had no any expanded. You remember the bailout was going to be stage one?
Yep.
And then they stopped all the other stages so that we didn't do anything. You know, we never did the infrastructure. We never did these other big ticket items they originally said they were going to do to stimulate the economy.
Right.
Because they didn't want a boom under Obama. So same way with this, they're trying desperately, you know, in our state, Texas, the same way, they are denying, you know, free expansions of health care to their citizens. And what they always do is, you know, the Republicans are blocking people. Like here in this state, you remember we had the exchanges already set up under the former governor, ready to roll out, and they closed them all so that no one could, you know, have any kind of help or access to get health care.
Okay.
And then they say, you know, Medicare and Medicaid and all that, oh, let's not accept any of this. Let's shut it all down. Shut it all, you know, all across the board. Anything possible to hurt people. And then they turn around and say that's because of Obamacare. When the exact opposite is true. You know, the opposite is Obamacare set up exchanges to help everyone and expanded the coverage and gave free to states. And then they shut it down and say, see what happens with that old Obamacare, you know. And they're basically robbing their own citizens. But, of course, they're blaming the president.
Now.
But, I mean, these are the games they're playing. They're just playing hardball politics. They will do anything and hurt anyone and turn around and blame the other for it.
I have no problem with hardball politics.
Yeah,
the problem is, though,
I have some kind of decency and some kind of honesty.
I don't have no D.C. No, there's no D.C. politics. The problem that I have is, how many dumb people are there out there?
Apparently.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
This is the problem. I mean, you expect somebody to be lied to, to be lied to, to be lied to, to be lied to, to be lied to. And then, you know, you say, well, wait a minute. Didn't he just say that a week ago? I mean, why is it not the case now? Why is it that in Texas, he's saying, oh, this is such a failure. It's such a failure. Oh, the governor of Texas, oh, the Obamacare is such a failure. But the Arizona governor, who's more conservative than him, took it.
Right.
Well, how can he – has anybody ever asked him that question?
Because, you know, one is at least an honest broker in the sense that it's just like, look, it's free money. It's going to help my economy.
For 3 years.
You know, it's going to help. It's going to help.
And then you don't have to have it no more.
No, but, you know, this one politician, just kind of a practical politician, saying this is going to help my state. This is going to build an economy. It will look good on me, reflect good on me. I'll go ahead and accept the free, you know, money. The other one is so credence, they're just going to do anything and hurt everybody possible so that, you know, they can make a talking point. And it's just different form of politician. But you are, again, talking about this Texan, Yahoo, who could not, on his own self-proclaimed presidential run, he couldn't count to three. I mean, so what do you got to – why are you asking think about intelligence?
And he had three fingers up, and he got the one, and he said two, and –
if you remember, he couldn't get two, and then –
Right, someone gave him one. Right.
That was Ron Paul.
Ron Paul gave him one.
Gave him one.
Right.
You know, and even Ron Paul was looking at him and said, you got to be kidding me. Remember, and he said
– absolutely.
You mean education? Yeah, Department of Education, yeah, you know, whatever. So, I mean, this is a moron. You know, so what are you talking about, Mike? Look. These people are out to do anything, out to say anything, to win.
Now,
it's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Hey, by the way,
if it's not about sex, it's about sex. If it's not about money, it's about money.
And did you hear this week, yet again, your absolutely fabulous, dynamic, cool Pope from down south?
No.
He called yet again for the redistribution of wealth to the poor. Republicans are in a conniption fit over this because they it's messing with their head when he keeps saying, but Jesus says, help the poor and love the children and all this stuff. And they're going, oh, shut up. Because all they want to use the Catholic Church for is a big abortion baseball bat so they can beat. You remember during the last election, rather infamously, when we had Kerry being swift-footed in the teeth, you know, an actual war hero running against an actual draft dodger who served on a bar in Alabama somewhere. They couldn't even find him at the bar. They had million-dollar bounties that are still unclaimed on anybody who ever saw him once on base, and not a single person claimed $1 million. I mean, you got to wonder about that. Anyway, so you have poor Kerry and them were getting attacked by, you remember, the Catholics were coming out saying anybody who votes for them will, you know, excommunicate, will kick out because you can't have a candidate who ever supports abortion. And then now you've got this Pope that's going, hey, you know what?
You think?
Trickle down. It's working. It doesn't work, you know. We need to actually help children and the starving and the poor. And, you know, you're supposed to love thy neighbor. And then they're going, who the hell thinks that? And he goes, that guy, Jesus, right here in the
book.
Who
the hell does he think he is?
Yeah.
The Pope?
Yeah, it's like, shut up. Know your place. You know.
Well, hey, let's just listen to our good friend who knows the Bible like the back of his hand. Senator Imhoff.
Now, Senator, we're going to talk about your book for a minute. You state in your book, which, by the way, is called The Greatest Hoax. We'll tell you how you can get it in just a few moments. But you state in your book that one of your favorite Bible verses, Genesis 8:22, while the earth remaineth seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. What's the significance of these verses to this issue?
Well, the Genesis 8:22 that I use in there is, as long as the earth remains, there will be springtime, harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, day and night. My point is, God's still up there. And this is the arrogance of people to think that we, human beings, would be able to change what he is doing in the climate is, to me, outrageous.
Yes.
Now, I don't remember anywhere in the Bible it says that. Point that out to me.
But listen, there's a strain of evangelicalism that is it's just nut baggery. But anyway, I told you about this. You remember my friend from Mississippi who became a fire-breathing, you know, devout evangelical.
Does he pee himself in the back with cat nine tails?
I don't ask anymore. But he is the guy who famously told me what even you said, you hinted at earlier. He said when we were talking about, you know, science and different things, and he goes, hey, dude, you got your facts, I got mine. So I was like right there, you know. But anyway, this guy literally, he says to me one time, we were talking about the environment and the damage, and I said, well, at the very least, I said, don't you think that, in the Bible it says you're supposed to be a good steward. I said, don't you think we owe it to our children to leave them some clean water and a few trees and, you know, just not pollute the entire earth and destroy it and burn it down? I said, doesn't that bother you? And he literally
said
to me, he goes, see, he said, that's what happens. You're a non-believer. He said, God is all-powerful, sees and knows everything, and he provides for mankind. He gave us this earth and everything on it. He said, we can burn everything down. We can dig every bit of coal up. Mm-hmm. We could destroy the entire world. We could pour all of our garbage into the oceans until they clog up and choke and die. Mm-hmm. And he said he'll come the next day and back and refresh them all. He goes, so what the hell, dude? He said, burn.
Wait a minute. Well, where does it say that?
He said, my children have endless future.
Where does it say that?
He said, that's what your non-belief is just making you fearful because you're too weak-minded. He said, God will provide forever. He said, you can burn this entire state down over and over, and he'll rebuild it the next
where
time.
Where?
They're not,
does it
Mike.
Say it.
It doesn't say it at
I
all.
I thought it said in the Bible that we should be good stewards.
Yes. It should. We have to take care of the world that he gave us.
He gave it to us. He gave it to us and told us to take care of it. He didn't give it to us and say, do what you want with it.
Right.
Throw it out.
As a matter of fact, very, very dramatically, over and over, you know, in just go check any, you know, local Allstate movie. Every time you stray from doing what he says, he comes and kills your ass.
Right. I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah, perfect example. They were treating people bad. They weren't doing the commandments. They weren't doing, and he got rid of them.
So,
it's all right.
Drowned the entire world, you know, and gave one dude a boat, you know. So, again, it's this
the
weird
known
strain.
World.
It's this weird strain. Look, they're the same ones. There was a group down there that were protesting when we were in school that we even had, like, philosophy and science classes at our school. And I was at the school, Hines. No, this is at USM. I was at USM, and they were protesting there. And this girl I was talking to one time about, I was like, why don't y'all want, because she was even complaining about, you know, they should only teach, you know, the Bible. And I'm like, why?
Teach the Bible where? In math class?
In school.
They should only teach the Bible in math class,
yeah.
Right?
And
okay,
like,
good.
She said they should just teach the Bible and everything. And she said, well, my preacher said it's, and she gave me this book on biblical inerrancy.
How did she get into that school anyway?
You wonder.
Yeah.
But she gave me this book on biblical inerrancy. And she said,
biblical what?
Inerrancy.
Okay, good.
This is a belief they have that the entire Bible is 100% accurate. The word can be changed. It's infallible because God wrote it. You know, God did.
But God didn't write it.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
no, you've already got into the weeds.
Okay, all right.
So,
but
it's
I don't
God.
Think he was here when this was being written.
So in evangelical terms, they think that the Bible's inerrant and there can be no error in it ever. Okay, so you cannot question.
Well, I don't. You're correct. I don't believe there's an error.
Well,
the error comes with the person who wrote it. And you have to understand that that was 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And some dude, like, walking around with his, you know, camel in the desert. You know.
I mean, and 2,000 years ago, you don't know what a computer was.
Yeah.
So, therefore, you got to write it in the language of 2,000 years ago,
yeah,
where 1 and 1 is 3.
Yeah.
People couldn't ask.
The other problems, just like everything with ancient history, you know, back then, only, you know, 1 in 1,000 people could even write.
That's right.
And you had
knew the name.
Tribes. So you had stories of a person.
Duh.
They finally wrote them down like 100 years after the guy died.
Right, right.
So everything is there.
I remember my great-great-uncle on the left side.
Yeah, this is the inerrant word of Jesus as told by my third cousin who met his 14th descendant over in another country, but heard about
it. And he had two heads.
You know, from Greece. So he's like, what are you talking about to begin with? It's always an interpretation.
Greece? Where's Greece?
So, but the problem is she literally said that you can't have anything but the Bible. It's inerrant and all that kind of stuff. And so I read this book and all, and it literally, it's you know, nutbag stuff, but it's how they justify things like, you know, anti-gay, you know, stuff. They say, well, it's not us, it's God. He said it right in the Bible. You know, you can't love gays.
God said that.
You know, so, but this is the stuff that you're running into with Inhofe. And what's scary about it, though, is that when you get one of these people in office, they have power, and he can write law and or affect law. And when you have someone who says, just like my friend from Mississippi, it doesn't matter. Pollution can't hurt the world. We can't do anything. How arrogant are humans to think that we could ever harm this world? God is all-powerful, and he'll come in and correct it. That's a very frightening statement. You know, and my theory with that, I'm like, you know, look, you know, my friend, I told him before, I said, why don't you have just, you know, make a deal with the city. We'll have the garbage dump on your land in your front yard, and we'll dump the uranium in your backyard, and we'll, you know, pump all the coal ash and all through your water pipes and all this. And then when your children with their, you know, three legs and their mutant, you know, head come out.
And what's wrong with three legs?
When you can run
faster.
Right, but where is God? And why is he not just instantly correcting the situation and making your home into the Garden of Eden? So I think that's what our new policy should be.
Speaking
about dumps and oil rigs on every Republican land.
Yeah, well, where did I see that? You see that there's a TV series on the Sci-Fi Channel called Defiance. Heard about that?
I don't watch TV.
That comes on, and it's on vacation now, but it comes back in another month.
I was too busy reading the Bible, Mike.
Defiance? Well, anyway, Defiance is this planet in some future date where desert, because we blew ourselves up and everything else, and now we got the, you know, it's going back to a Western type of genre, but, you know, you got the marshal, you got somebody that runs it, and you know, not exactly, because all the horses are dead anyway. But they use
cars. You know why there's defiance, Mike? Because they canceled Firefly.
That's true. That's true. That's another reason. Well, anyway, now, let me play what one of the megalomaniacs at Fox News, person who, if he had one more brain, he'd be dangerous, and the problem is he's got two heads. Charles Krauthammer.
This law of the land doesn't even exist. It exists in Obama's head. It's whatever he thinks. He wakes up in the morning and decides what tomorrow's going to be.
That's not the way it's supposed to work.
Now, this is how do they see? We are talking to people just like your friend in Mississippi. I can't believe there are so many people like that who would say the president wakes up and he thinks the law of the land is what it is. That's not the way the Constitution works. He has inherent powers as the president of the United States to do things within his own realm. He cannot make laws.
Right. But see, there's
a law is something that has to be obeyed by everybody. Now, he can do something federally because he's in charge of the federal government. What don't you understand about this?
Well, I think there's one person in Washington that understands this, and he's a constitutional scholar.
Oh.
Who's that? Oh,
who's that? Obama. Oh.
But I don't think that what cracks me up about all of these people, just like, you know, her robe, here we've got the Hama of the Krauts telling us about what is Obama, because he thinks he knows the law.
Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about Krauthammer, who has to sit in the same position, and God forbid anybody's like that, who is crippled, but you would think that he would like to tell the truth because he's got to face his maker, but I guess he feels since he's been so screwed up on this planet right now, what more can be done to him in the afterlife, right? He says, Charles Krauthammer, climate change is a superstition. Like the Native American rain dance.
Is that like...
Now, how does he know what the Native American... All he does, he knows, he's read about it. He's seen it in Western.
Yeah, and it's probably his good friend, the daughter of the Oklahoma governor, who does the rain dance on stage saying, you're all sheep, you know. That's probably where he's seen it.
Here's what he says. Krauthammer claims that climate change is just a fantasy akin to a religious myth. In the wake of yet another report on the impact of climate change is already having on the world, Krauthammer took to Wednesday's special report with, you know.
Special.
Yes.
Late breaking.
Every day.
Dun, 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 dun.
To compare beliefs in the theory to beliefs in the power of gods to control the weather. The beliefs. This is not a damn belief. Krauthammer, who hasn't been to one science class since he was in elementary school, okay, is the oldest superstition around, he said. It was in the Old Testament. It's in the rain dance of the Native Americans. If you sin, the skies will not cooperate. Krauthammer said the consensus around the science of climate change was just as dubious as the consensus around debunk theories. I'm not impressed by the numbers. Now, the problem is...
Well, the thing is, look, Mike, he's a columnist. He's just...
That's the way I want to prove wrong. He'll say, well, gee whiz, I was only a colorist giving my opinion.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's correct. That's what Rush Limbaugh does all the time.
Yeah,
you know.
They'll say the most outrageous thing.
Right.
And then
they'll say, I'm just a commentator.
It's like when Fox News got sued, and then they went to court and literally won by saying, we're not a news channel. It's an entertainment show.
Entertainment.
And we don't have to adhere to facts.
That's right.
And so then the court had to throw out the case because they had no legal requirement to state facts. So that's how they get away with this. But, no, this is why he can sit there and tell literally a lawyer who's become a politician who made laws and then moved into the Congress and made laws and then moved to the presidency to
a constitutional lawyer.
Doesn't know what he's talking about, but he, the Krauthammer, knows all. See, and that's the thing. These opinions,
well,
like, it's kind of like Glenn Beck. God tells him what to say.
Mm-hmm. And you know what to do to people when they say, God told me to do this.
And we give them a very special jacket with extra long sleeves.
Extra long sleeves with straps in the back. Well, hey, Wyoming now is the first state to reject science standards over climate change denial. They're rejecting it. The first state. Cheyenne, Wyoming. This is coming from the AP. Bob Moen. Wyoming, the nation's top coal-producing state. Can I repeat that? Wyoming, the nation's top coal-producing state, is the first to reject new K-12 science standards proposed by the national education groups, mainly because of global warming components. The Wyoming Board of Education decided recently that the next generation of science standards needs more review after questions were raised about the treatment of man-made global warming. Board President Ron Michelli said that review would look into whether we can't get some standards that are Wyoming standards. Oh, so you mean to tell me that the standards of science in Wyoming are going to be the standard different from the standards of science in Rhode Island? Is that what you're trying to say?
So you mean it's
a different climate in Wyoming than it is in?
Well, it's different. It's a different reality. See, that's the 50. That's the states' rights model of science.
Uh-huh.
See, gravity is very different there than in North Carolina. Light travels at a different rate there.
That's true.
Because
does it?
Of the
yes.
strange interaction of the atmosphere.
Hmm.
Or maybe God, I don't know. See, this is the lunacy where they start saying, you know, you should have a different standard, your own standard for your own state, for a science and all that. No.
Well, why don't they just leave the states? Form their own state.
Kind of like Israel with the gigantic wall.
Yes. This review looked into whether we can't get some standards that are Wyoming standards and standards that we all can be proud of.
Speaking of being proud of, I just want to point something out about, since we're on Krauthammer, just to remind people, because no one knows what the hell we're talking about. But if you look him up, Krauthammer was actually a psychiatrist. He's a trained doctor. But he's
trained?
Yeah.
You mean like a chimpanzee trained? Chimpanzee trained?
Before he became just a talking head, he was actually a psychiatrist. He did some stuff. You know, like he researched depression and stuff and, you know, found some things.
Why does he always look depressed?
He was brought to, this is what's hysterical, he was brought to Washington, D.C. under the Carter administration. Worked with Carter. All right? And then worked with a little guy people might remember. Real big hero all over the world of Republicans called Walter Mondale.
Oh.
He was a speechwriter.
For Walter Mondale?
Right? But here's the thing. Listen, he came to prominence under them and became kind of well-known because he could turn a phrase and all this kind of stuff. So he started writing for New Republic and all this stuff. But he wrote a column for Time magazine. In 1983, he got on board with the whole Reagan deal. Right? And he's the one, this is why he's a darling of the Republicans. And this is why he's always, you know, preeminent everywhere. He's the one who created, he coined it, the whole term, the Reagan Doctrine. Because he said Reagan has brought a whole new thing to Washington, and he's now made it his. And he's the guy.
That's when he got on board because.
He came over there, and then that's when he became a right-wing columnist and started
because
working.
Because he made more money.
Because that, well, because they just loved him because he enshrined the leader, the great one, Grandpa.
Okay.
But see, I think it's hysterical that, again, just like we have this guy here in our state who runs around trying to get anti-gay laws written into the Constitution and everything else.
Governor R. Pope?
No, not the governor. Oh. Just the little congressman here that was just outed recently because he's also a cross-dressing performer.
Oh, Tom Tillis? Oh, no.
I love these people, how they have these. Once you look into the background, it's always just like, really? You know, and this guy literally is, works on Jimmy Carter.
No, the turncoat.
Walter Mondale's speechwriter.
Turncoat.
Now, I think he should, all of his book covers should have him on like a tank, you know, driving through town or something.
Well, that's true. He had to get up there first. Okay, now. Some standards that are Wyoming standards. Okay, he said, now this is, we want Wyoming standards. We don't want the rest of them standards. He said, others see the decision as a blow to science education in Wyoming.
Of course it is.
But the science standards are acknowledged to be the best to prepare our kids for future and that peer reviewed. Why would we want anything less for Wyoming? Margaret Herman, a proponent of the standards, said. 12 states have adopted the standards since they were released in April 2013 with the goal of improving science education, and Wyoming is the first to reject them. Chad Colby, spokesman for the Achieved, one of the organizations that helped write the standards. The standards are what students should be expected to know at the end of each grade, but how a teacher teaches them is still up to the local districts and the states, and even the teachers in most cases, said Colby. But the global warming and evolution component have created pushback around the country. Amy Edmonds of Wyoming Liberty Group said teaching one view is what is not settled. Science about global warming is just one of the number of problems with the standards. I think Wyoming can do far better. Wyoming produces almost 40% of the nation's coal and much of it used by power plants to provide electricity around the nation. Minerals taxes on coal provide $1 billion to the state and local governments in 2012, and coal mining supports 6,900 jobs in the state. Burning coal to generate electricity produces large amounts of CO2, which is considered a heat-trapping gas in the atmosphere. Most scientists recognize man-made CO2 emissions contribute to global warming. However, the degree to which it can be blamed for global warming is in dispute among the scientists. Oh, I guess these people don't remember the story when our astronauts were in outer space, Apollo 13, and they had a rig. They had to rig a filtered system in order for them to get back to this planet because of the CO2s that their breath was generating in the space capsule. That's just us.
Right. I thought,
what about the coal plants producing CO2?
That's one time, you know, my same friend that was such a genius, he was saying something about it. I said, you know, it's just obvious that global warming is being affected by pollution. And he was like, you're stupid. The atmosphere is so huge and vast. Nothing that we do is anything. It's not. It doesn't affect it at all.
Yeah, it just goes off into space.
And I said, then my point. I said, then why, when if you turn your car on, like in your garage, you can commit suicide?
You die.
Why is that?
If it just goes into space.
So I said, it's just simple logic. If you take, you know, a million more cars or whatever on the road every year and pump it into the air, it poisons the air in general. And he was just like, no, dude. You know, I mean, it's so. Talk about standards.
You know, it's like TV series Under the Dome. So we're under a dome. Like, just picture this. We are under a dome because if we didn't have a dome or something covering our atmosphere would flow off into space. Our atmosphere is trapped because of gravity, one, and the spin of the earth too. And because of that, we have something that covers us, like the ionosphere.
It's like a security blanket from God.
Absolutely. And that is to keep us from getting all the radiation
which is
from
the exact same reason.
Coming from outer space to us.
That's why they said, you know, the biggest problem with colonizing the moon or Mars, like right now,
there's
no
atmosphere.
There's no atmosphere, but we have, like, you know, tanks and everybody can walk around with little breathers and all that. That ain't the problem. The problem is
the car can't.
When you get there, you can't. The radiation will kill you.
Absolutely.
And there, you would have to walk around and, you know, encased in lead the whole day. So that's been the issue because they don't have an atmosphere which we have to filter
out
the. Which is the reason, by the way, that people get so upset with certain types of pollution is that it breaks down the ozone layer. And everybody talks about that. It's like, oh, what's that? But that is that little bitty, itty-bitty thin layer that protects us from cosmic radiation.
That's right.
If you didn't have that, the sun would be – you won't talk about a sunburn.
It would be a sunburn. It would
be
a sun kill.
Yeah, it just had like –
You'd be dead.
More melanoma.
It's like sticking your hand in the microwave.
Yeah. I mean, so that is what protects
us. And turning
it
on.
Don't realize it. And again, I think it's one of those things that, like you said, if everybody could go onto the little capsule and breathe for a few minutes and then suddenly start choking to death, they would learn very quickly that science matters because it affects them. But when it's you're on the trailer park, you know, you're sitting there watching your big screen TV and, you know, WWF's fixing to come on, but then somebody wants to come on and talk about climate change and all that, you know, get off the screen, man. This is boring.
Well, it's
because it doesn't affect them. So they think, oh, what's this science crap?
You know what this is? This is like, okay, I show you what it means. Stick your head in, run the water in your bathtub and stick your head in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Why can't you breathe? Because there's something out there preventing you from breathing. You breathe that stuff.
Kind of like that old song by Thomas Dolby. She blinded me with science. You know?
Oh, gracious.
But well, some of these people, if you listen to their statements, I mean, in their view, then, if you follow their belief, if you stick your head in water, God will magically appear and make the water disappear, and you'll breathe again. You know, I mean, that's their excuse.
Just like
he just
parting the Red Sea.
Yeah, he'll just fix it. No, what really happens is you kill yourself, and you're an idiot.
Oh.
And then God says, I gave you a chance and a choice.
And you
blew
it up. Well, and evidently, he parted the Red Sea. He didn't say, walk right through the water, and I'll protect you.
Mm-hmm.
No. God did not say that. He said, let me part it because you people will screw up and drown. That's what he said.
Yeah. No, because after all these years I gave you, y'all didn't learn to swim.
Didn't learn to swim at all.
So I had to part the entire sea just so you could walk.
And besides that, your pack mules and your horses would drown too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said, now.
By the way, this entire show is going to have biblical allusions.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have biblical.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
This
he said, Andy Edmonds of Wyoming Liberty Group. And it said, teaching one view of what is not settled science about global warming
science
is just
settled.
Come one of a number of problems to stand in. Now, what do you mean not settled? Now, I worked for the National Weather Service 25 years. Don't tell me this ain't settled.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, why do they have a National Hurricane Center that tracks tornadoes, hurricanes in Oklahoma? Why do you need it there? Since it's God's will.
Right.
Why do you need to tell anybody when it's coming?
Well, again,
can't tell anybody because, hey, God's Bible will make it come to your basement but not go to your house.
Yeah.
I mean, he can do whatever he wants.
Well, you know, the reason man can fly is because they studied scientific methods.
And oh, really?
Took devices.
No, that was Kitty Hawk.
Forms.
That was in Kitty Hawk. That wasn't in Wyoming.
But they endlessly experimented until they found a viable method of flight, right?
You mean they didn't fact that we...
Yeah, well, a lot of people did. They fell to their deaths and stuff, you know. But over time, they figured out what works, and then now we can fly everywhere.
Oh, you know,
airports.
That reminded me of a great movie.
Again, you know, you didn't get the ability to fly from, you know, all
time. Well, I can't remember the name of the movie. Jack Palance.
Mm-hmm.
My father took me to see this. I was a young kid. He took me to see Jack Palance was some sort of, it took place in the in the, you know, the biblical days, and he was a great magician and things, and he just got so full of himself. Mm-hmm. And he was going to, he got to the point where he could say, I can do anything, and I can fly. And the his girlfriend in it said, look, no, please don't do this. He said, no, God told me I can fly. I can fly.
Is it the silver chalice?
No. This is where he jumped off the building, off the tower, the highest tower. He had this cape with these little wing flaps inside of it.
Okay. Barabbas, Fandango.
He fell like a freaking rock and splat on the ground. And the government said, okay, that was the end of the movie. But it built up to the whole thing.
Right.
I don't think it was the silver chalice. He was a magician. Great story. Love that story. I have not seen that too much on TV. I don't remember the last time I saw it on TV, but he...
You remember my old mean joke that I would...
Mean joke.
I would do to people like my friend. Is it Simon Magus?
No. I'll know when I hear it. No, wasn't it?
So the silver chalice, they said something about Simon Flies.
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
Simon the Magician.
Yes. Simon the Magician, right. What can you tell us about that?
Anyway, just real quick, what I was going to say with the other is, I used to say, if you want to test science versus your faith, okay, because you're telling me, like, for instance, that the entire world could be remade if we, you know, the forest would be remade overnight if we cut it down.
Absolutely.
I'll be fair. I'll even give you two. You can take two Bibles, not just one, but one for each hand, two Bibles. I'll take one parachute.
Okay.
We'll get in that airplane.
Yes.
Okay. We'll jump out the back.
Okay.
I'll pull the chute, and you pray. And let's see who wins the argument. Is it science or is it God? That's a mean way to say it.
Well, but now the problem is what do you think?
But again,
Senator Imhoff would say over that. That I'd like to find out.
Yeah, I think it's a silver chalice.
Silver chalice.
Science,
yeah, you're right.
Simon the Magician.
Simon the Magician. Yes, he was a magician of that. He was the magician.
So, that is the one. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. See, Jack?
Silver Chalice, great film. Great film. I tell you, great film. It is a great film. And, so he wanted to prove everybody that he knew more than everybody and that there was everything that he could do anything.
1954.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like it. Silver Chalice. I'm trying to say, was Vic Mature in that?
It just says the little blurb is a Greek artisan's commissioned to cast the cup of Christ in silver and sculpt the rim with the faces. And he eventually travels to Jerusalem and Rome, you know, that type of storyline, meeting different people. Let's see, who all was in it?
Vic Mature?
Virginia Mayo, Pierre Angeli, Jack Palance, Paul Newman.
Paul Newman, that's right. That was a young Paul Newman. Long Green. It was a good cast.
Jack Palance and Walter Hampson and Joseph. Wow, I'm just looking. There's a whole bunch of people.
Oh yeah, that was a great film. But yes, we have a major problem
based on the book by Thomas B. Costain.
Yes,
the original.
The Silver Chalice was a great book. Now, leaving the Bible for an instant,
the flying magician,
because we can't leave the Bible for a long time. But
not when dealing with
not when we're dealing with the.
So what are we looking at?
What is the story now with the VA?
Well,
freaking break. I am so sick and tired of these morons who want to jump on any. None of these people have ever been in the military.
Right.
They're talking about General Senseki, who is a wounded. I think he was a wounded war vet.
Mm-hmm.
He is a wounded war vet. He also is a general. He's the chief of staff of the Army. He was the one who told Bush originally, this is a screwed up plan of you going into Iraq.
Right.
And he was fired. They said, oh, no, he was resigned. Bullshit, he was fired. Now we got somebody who knows about what it takes to help our vets. And the Republicans want to crucify him because they don't have anybody but that lunatic McCain, who should have been court-martialed for trying to sink his own daggone aircraft carrier. I mean, that's all they have. They don't have anybody else. Who else do they have? Oh, Colonel Ollie North they have, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
The criminal?
Yeah.
And
well, you know what? You know, give Ollie his due. He
I give him his due.
He
needs to be in jail.
Hey, no.
Yes.
He was in jail.
Yeah, that's true.
He saved President Reagan from impeachment. That was his job. He took the full blame. And he did a good job because he kept the president out of prison because the president was headed to prison. I mean, this is when you get a president that is running.
What they did, his boss really took him. You know, who was his boss? No, Oliver North's boss, Poindexter.
Yeah, but you know, you're still talking about the entire
yeah.
CIA Bush complex.
We have a major problem with these clowns.
Well, the thing is, and we talked about this the other day with the VA, the problem the VA is, you know, all government agencies in general have that little bit of a, you know, any big organization has a little bit of a problem with efficiency. That's the nature of big organizations. However, they've been trying to increase this efficiency of this and all this, but the problem is that it is heavily, heavily overburdened.
Of course.
Our, you know, 12 years of war.
Oh, you
they've
think?
Had two major wars and a whole flood of new veterans coming in, and then they're trying to make, you know, hay with that with Obama like it's his fault.
Well, right now we have with us on the air, it's our doctors in the house. Dr. Grace. How are you, Dr. Grace? Are you there?
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hello,
how
Michael.
Are you?
Well, what's the story?
You are spot on with Eric Shinseki. Let me, you know, I have been away. But I want to tell you that here I was at the military tattoo in Norfolk, and it was wonderful. I mean, you know, drill teams and marching bands from all over the world. It was a great, great, great show. That Scottish dancers and Irish cloggers and stuff like that. It was just very good. In the middle of all of this, we were sitting in the grandstand watching the parade, because they had the parade also one day, I was seated next to Kevin Henretta, and Kevin Henretta was just sworn in as the deputy director to General Shinseki. And Kevin is a really straightforward, very forthcoming, very honest kind of a fella. Okay, he doesn't take no prisoners either. All right. Well, we got around talking about Shinseki, and this man said, you know, of all the people that he has ever worked with, Eric Shinseki is the most honest, the most forthcoming, and also the shyest person. He's not out there to get publicity. He's not out there for the glory. He's out there for the military. That's what he's out there for. And, of course, you know that Rick Shinseki is a good friend of Joe's, and I'm a little bit biased, but it was so nice to hear that from somebody who went to work in the administration and went to work, you know, in really a bureaucracy and really, really admires his boss. Well, let me tell you what Rick Shinseki has done for the military since he's been in as the Secretary of the VA. He has increased the budget for spending for the vets. He's increased that budget. He has cut the wait time. Now, you know, and that's no mean feat, because we didn't expect anybody to be able to cut the wait time with the influx of the vets coming from Iraq and Afghanistan. But he managed to do it right. He wanted to do it, you know, maybe he didn't accomplish it as great of a goal as he had, but he did cut the wait time. He also cut, and this is just for evaluations, right? He's the one who stood behind people who said, yes, PTSD is a legitimate a veteran's complaint. It's legitimate. It is a disability. Now, Rishin Sethi, you're right. He was in Vietnam. He lost a foot. Okay?
Right.
He was a lieutenant in Vietnam, and he worked his way up through the ranks. He's a four-star general right now, and he's an amazing fella, a truly amazing fella. Of all the people in the whole wide world, this man, I can tell you, is a peace lover. Okay? He's a general, and he's a general in the true sense of the word. He looks for peace among people. He does not want to send boys and girls into harm's way. Absolutely does not. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with, you know, what he said about Iraq. The other thing also is that, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my wife works for the VA, and she said has seen a major change in the VA since he became the head of the VA. And she works in special surgeries, special something or other. And, a lot of the people that she sees come in are mostly still Vietnam vets.
Uh-huh.
Some of these Vietnam vets that need, said a lot of them are really psychologically are still very frail.
Absolutely. And I don't want to diminish, you know, what happened to this Vietnam veteran out in Arizona. I don't want to diminish that. That's serious. And that if indeed that all those accusations are true, that's truly heinous. Okay, and we need to be doing something about it.
You're asking to say
it's Eric Shinseki's fault. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's complete. You know, the thing is,
he was brought in.
That's right.
Because of that.
Right.
And his task, which he has stated over and over, he said, Obama brought me in to, and I'm doing that.
Right.
And that's what he's going through. He's the one who called for, you know, face-to-face audits for every clinic in America. It's never happened. He's the one who is, like you said, cutting wait times and getting rid of the problems one by one. It's just he's trying. I mean, he's got an unbelievable task.
Well, see, here's the thing. You know, the thing is that we had someone that the Cheney-Bush administration, and it's the Cheney-Bush administration, had in place to kill this problem.
Uh-huh.
Just
uh-huh.
like when Reagan came into, was president, he brought in a clown to kill and cancel all the EEO problems by the name of Clarence Thomas.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was EEO rep for my organization. And Clarence Thomas, there was over 6,000 cases backlog of EEO complaints. And what Clarence Thomas did was sit on them. And after 2 years, they're automatically thrown away, all the cases. So he got credit for cleaning up more than 4,000 cases. But he didn't clean them up.
He
sat on them.
He cleaned them up into the circular bin.
That's what happened. So the same thing, I forgot who was the chair before Shinseki. It was that clown they put in who didn't know Jack. Can't think of his name. Before he
I know
was
who
the
you're
one
talking about.
That got the VA into the predicament that it was right now. He was the one that got that we saw all the complaints down there in Maryland and in Washington D.C. at the at the main facility where they were they had holes in the ceiling where they had
Walter Reed was infested with cockroaches. The walls were falling down. The plaster was falling down. Absolutely. They shut Walter Reed down.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was under Bush.
That was under Reagan.
That was under W.
Yeah, that was under W. And the thing was,
he didn't even go to any of the.
He never went until he was shamed into going to the VA hospital.
In his second term.
So you see, nothing was done at any of these facilities. They want to, because remember, what was the main reason for Rumsfeld to have us go into war with such few troops? Because they want
to make this a not a military organization or military army. They want it to be a private army where they no longer have to pay for retirement. They no longer have to pay for health care. They no longer have to pay. You get a flat rate. You're military. It's just like, what's the name of the that your boy, your Nazi friend that wrote the book, Star Troopers. I mean, Rana A. Highland, where they have, it's all volunteers. And they don't pay for health care. They don't pay for a pension. They don't pay for sick leave. You get a flat rate. You want to be in the army, that's what you do for the glory. So this is what they wanted to do, but it didn't work. And now we had soldiers that were in the military in Iraq and Afghanistan for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm. How many deployments? Really? Think about 7, 8, 9, and 10 deployments.
The one of the gentlemen who, a sergeant, a Marine, I believe, who just got the Congressional Medal of Honor at the White House 3 months ago, was 10 deferments. I mean, not 10 deferments, 10 tours.
10 tours.
Mm-hmm. 10 tours, mm-hmm. he served.
10 tours. 10 tours.
Are you insane? I mean, why? Because we have nobody else to go. We don't have enough military.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because this is a backdoor draft.
It was a backdoor draft.
And now
you have somebody who really cares enough about the vets, who knows enough about the vets to really be able to identify with them. Let me tell you something. You know, when you lose a limb, all right, and lose a part of your body, you encounter what is known as phantom limb syndrome. And it's phantom limb pain, and you wake up every day thinking the foot that you lost hurts, or the arm that you lost hurts. Okay? That's what you think. And it's not just, you know, oh, minor little pain. It is a throbbing, absolutely excruciating pain. That is what General Shinseki wakes up to every day. But you don't hear him bitch about it. He just keeps right on going. He soldiers along. Now, the only veterans organization that is asking for Shinseki's resignation is the American Legion. If you look at the American Legion, they are majority Republican. Take a look. They're majority Republican.
Yeah.
If you look also, there is no other veteran organization that is asking for Shinseki's resignation. All of the others, from BVA to IAVA to, you know, VFW, yes, all of them say absolutely not, he should stay on.
And the thing is, Mike,
that's different. What she's been saying about him that I absolutely love, he is a veteran. He is, as she said, soldiering on. He is literally doing his duty to this country. And he's doing the right thing. He's not a political appointee. You know, Bush was famous for putting in cronies, just like you mentioned before, that
Which
not
exactly
only
right.
just gets mm-hmm. the job, they were actually against the job.
Right.
Ahead.
Absolutely.
My favorite
right.
of that
right.
was John Bolton.
Right. Oh,
the UN.
Another guy.
I mean, this guy made an entire
the
career
right.
saying we need to abolish the UN,
right.
and then they appoint him as that job.
Right.
And these other guys were going in there causing the problems now that Shinseki is having to fix.
Right.
And yet they're trying to blame
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
He said they're just cleaning the mess.
Well, here's the thing, that the GAO said that since May 2013, VA clinics nationwide have been under pressure to clear more than 2 million backlog orders for patient care or services and were given wide latitude to cancel unfulfilled appointments more than 90 days old. By April 2014, the backlog of what the agency calls unresolved consults was reportedly down to 450,000. Now, the problem is we have 2 million backlog. Why? Because nothing was done under the Bush
mm-hmm.
administration.
That's right. Nothing. That's exactly right. Nothing. Nothing was done. Absolutely nothing was done. But
nothing
I didn't see all these people getting up on their high horse and getting incensed and outraged Where was the outrage then? Okay, there's no outrage then, but there's outrage now. Wait a minute. You know, that makes absolutely no sense at all. The other thing is that, another thing is that McCain is the last person in the world who is to criticize anyone. Let me tell you about McCain. Yeah, he was a POW, however many years it was. He was 1 week. Now, this is from his words, the words out of his mouth, by the way. Okay, so I am not telling stories out of school. The words from his mouth, when he was first interviewed, when he got home, okay, is he said that he made a conscious decision to cooperate with the enemy for better care for himself, not for his fellow prisoners, but for himself. And I want you to know that his fellow prisoners, when they got out of the Hanoi Hilton, they wanted his ass, court-martialed. They wanted him court-martialed.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
This is the same son of a gun who goes out there now and he talks about how, you know, oh, my goodness, he's a prisoner of war. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was 7 year prisoner of war, would have been dead if his father wasn't the head of the Pacific Fleet.
And also would have been dead if he had not made that conscious effort, that conscious decision to cooperate with the enemy, to become another Hanoi Jane, but now this is a Hanoi McCain. And he made several propaganda messages. Absolutely.
I don't even care about that. What I care about is that the man should have been grounded. He almost sank his own ship. Here's the one that called that
five
on the
five,
phone.
Honey, five.
Well, hey,
five
there
plates.
It is. That's right. But he almost sank the ship.
But then he comes back and he gets in his high horse. You know, you know what, Martin? You need to just keep your mouth shut. Because the people who still remember, you know?
Yes. The people who aren't over there have no idea what that man did.
Yes.
And I want to tell you, I know. I was in the Air Force and I heard about it. So, hey, I mean, how the hell did that happen? He's in the damn Navy, but I know about him.
Yeah. Well, look, talking about getting back to the VA, is the double standard.
Yep.
That they are attacking Obama and blaming his director for the problems that Bush set up.
Yeah.
I want you to just say this is a brief list. This isn't everything, but here's a brief list. Under Bush, besides starting the war, besides, you know, just doubling all the veterans we had overnight and dumping them all in roach-infested, falling-down facilities and all that, he actively cut the budget of the VA every year he's in there. 2004 budget cut the VA funding by over $2 billion. That's in the middle of the war when we had two wars going on. Right, he did everything he could to stop funding in any way. He cut back military family housing, took $2 billion out of that. He gave took the child tax credit away from military families. Okay, he denied said that no one in the Guard or Reserve should be have access to any health insurance.
That's right. And how many are on? How many are on welfare?
Right, but then he's also the one.
13% of our military is on welfare now.
At the same time, just denying them medical research. The reason he's denying them medical research is insurance is because he is the one who made them active, took them from being weekend warrior here helping their communities and sent them overseas to sign a war where they're not even supposed to serve. They're National Guard.
That's right, the National Guard.
National, you know, Expeditionary Corps. But anyway, there was on and on.
Well, the thing was...
Now they're investigating.
Well, the problem is that 90% of these people joined the VA, they joined the National Guard to get an education. Never thinking they would ever serve in the military. Okay, pie in the sky. But hey, serving in the military. Yeah, okay, maybe 2 years. But 10?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Come on.
It's one thing to serve and say I'm going to serve in the military here, and I'm on my health maybe every once in a while with a tornado. There's nothing to say, oh, you're going to go for a 10-year trip to Iraq. That's two different universes.
Absolutely. So what...
where were you from?
That's right.
No, I can't hear a word that old Thomas is saying because it's all garbled. But I'm sure it's
right?
good, Thomas. I'm sure it's good. I'm sure whatever Thomas is saying is good.
There was a loud whisper. I don't know what was going on then. He was saying, where was the outrage when all this was going on, when they were cutting all their pay and all their other stuff for the VA. You're absolutely correct.
I know. That gets me, too. That just irritates the heck out of me because they get on this thing about righteous indignation, okay? They're righteously outraged. Really, where was your righteous outrage and your righteous indignation when fill in the blank? We have so many past instances of when they should have been outraged, when they should have had this absolute, you know, indignation, and they just shut up. They didn't say a word. Because anyone who did, then automatically became unpatriotic.
Absolutely.
You know,
and, you know
they
have really
some brass.
They got this guy, Dan Caldwell, who's a Marine veteran who fought in Iraq, is now the issues of legislative campaign managers for Concerned Veterans for America. There is a systematic and cultural problem at the VA. We call for Shizeki to go a year, and we're happy the American Legion is now calling for his firing. The problem is, though, the problem is that the VA has now treated more. Now we got a lot of static on the air here. I don't know what the story is. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
You can hear me. Okay. Yeah. The VA has treated more than 1 million men and women from the war zones of Iraq and Afghanistan. Why? Why should we have to have treated more than 1 million men and women in a war that was never declared? This is just completely idiotic. I mean, do you know they're missing the forest with the daggone trees? It's just outrageous. And I'm just so sick of these people complaining, and they're the ones that have put everything in the position where it is today.
Yeah, these are the same, like you're talking about the bumper sticker patriots. These are people who want to wave a flag and put something on their car, but they think that war doesn't hurt anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And it
doesn't hurt anybody. You do it long distance.
That's the thing that bothers me the most. That you remember throughout the entire Bush presidency, they didn't ever declare in the budget the war. There were no war costs ever. It wasn't even reconciled until Obama came in. He had the first budget ever to reflect the war costs. And then, of course, they said, look how he's breaking the economy. Look at his budget. But they have war at no cost. What we're going to suffer for the next generation is all of the cost of these veterans. You know, because people have lost their lives and or parts of their bodies. We're going to have to be paying for that forever.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, they keep saying, well, in theory, the VA will pay for eligible veterans to go to non-VA providers when it's unable to provide timely care or specific treatment or because the veteran lies far from a VA, or they live far from a VA facility. Please, do you know what the scream would be if we started going to a freaking specialist who charges $145 just to park in the parking lot? Are you kidding me? This is such a loud, a load of crap. No way in the world would they say that would be the next major thing they'd be screaming about. Oh, why is the VA costing so much? And here's the thing, Obama in 2015, the VA budget of $163.9 billion includes $68.3 billion in discretionary resources and $95.6 billion in mandatory funding. VA's discretionary budget request represents an increase of 2.5
$2 billion, or 3% over a 2014 enhanced level. According to the statement of the agency's website, 2015 budget will help ensure that veterans, their families, and survivors receive highest quality benefits and services we can provide, which they earn through their sacrifice and service to our nation. It don't matter what the daggone cost is. It should be paid for. And it doesn't matter. Forget about giving a daggone tax break. We take care of these vets first, or else you wouldn't have any place to protect with your daggone taxes. I mean, it's completely lunacy.
But it's always about the need.
It's about the need.
Whatever is being implemented on a quote-unquote gold-plated health care.
Right.
For free, on the hand, that's the way they operate. Like I said, they want war for free.
And they have a problem. Yeah, it works for free. Right. Well,
how are you
going to
fix this, Dr. Gray?
Yeah, how
are
you going to fix it?
I have completely lost Thomas.
Yeah, we.
I can hear you, Michael. But
well, where are you at? Where are
okay.
you at?
Where am I?
Yeah, you in.
No. I just left Lumberton.
Oh, okay. Because it's raining here hard. It's very dark, overcast.
Ah, got it. Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's
it's
what it is.
It's pretty overcast. Yeah, it's pretty overcast here too. Yeah.
All right, Dr. Grace, I want to, what do you have when we get to our next caller on the line here? What can you tell us about what is going on in the Democratic Party? You got 1 minute.
District convention is coming up. I know it. District convention is coming up May the 17th. The state convention is June the 7th with a JJ dinner at that point in time also. We're moving forward. We are moving forward. We're not going to let the naysayers stop on what we have to do. We've got to fight to get the 8th District back in the hands of the Blues and not run these Tea Party is out of town. So it's going to be a long road, but we're going to work on it.
How is Kay Hagan's campaign coming?
Hey, she's coming out now. She's coming out strong in support of Obama. Thank goodness.
It's about time.
It is about time. Yep. She's finally listening because we've been saying you cannot run away from the party. You cannot run away from Obama. You got to dance with Obama.
You got that right. Okay. Dr. Grace, I want to thank you for everything and tell Joe we said hello. I wish you could have been on today.
I know it.
I can't come up next week. I'd like to have his input on this day.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Well, all right. All right. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Good. That's Dr. Grace Leib, our resident doctor. Yes. Okay. We are in I don't know what we can say this, but for the for where we're at right now, as a matter of fact, I have to play this again before our next guest comes on the line because this is his man. Let's listen to this.
The following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
And who am I addressing on the phone? Is it Jack Bauer?
Yeah. It's Jack Bauer.
It's Jack Bauer Madden. And
it's Jack Bauer.
Now, have you caught up to On Demand yet, the first show?
No, I haven't had a chance. I told you. I had to have my wife give me a brief synopsis, which took more than 2 hours, but
well, it was a 2 hour show, so she was pretty close. She must have had some commercials in there.
Verbatim.
She must have had some commercials in there too, huh?
She had several little we will just call them rest breaks to catch me up to what was going on, but very excited that Jack is back. I think it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
And
Jack being back though, Mr. Madden, you now have 24 hours to solve all our problems.
That's right.
What are you going to do?
The first thing is that, hey, Chloe was just like she normally was. Can you, let me see, are you having problems here? Can you hear Thomas?
I could barely hear Thomas.
I could barely hear Thomas. Let's see now, why is that? Let's see here.
I like listening
now,
to Thomas.
Yes,
Thomas generally has something good to say. He's one of the best parts of your show.
Oh, thank you. Go on, say something.
More of that, please. Can you hear me now better?
I can hear him a little better, Michael, but he's still pretty faint.
Right.
We're just having fun with Mike, so.
All right, go ahead.
There you go.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what that's causing.
Technology.
Technology.
I hear the future, Mike.
Do you hear the future?
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
it's,
we'll
give this a try.
I've said, like Jack Bauer, you've got 24 hours to solve all our problems. So, come on, get with it, Mr. Madden. Let's go.
Okay.
Oh,
is that better?
It wouldn't take 24 hours to fix all our problems.
Yeah, so that's what they say. So tell us now, I'd like to know, is the deal, well, we're going to start this way. Yeah, you're here because you are the creator of a unique marketing organization called Alcoa. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
And what does Alcoa do?
Well, Alcoa is, I would imagine the easiest way to describe it would be it's a live, local referral network. Like, just imagine everything you can find in the Yellow Pages concerning your home or your life at the house or your business. We provide that service so that instead of having to look up all this, try to make an eeny, meeny, miny, mo decision, all you have to do is call us, tell us what you want, hang up, and within a very short time, probably well within an hour, we'll have licensed and insured, thoroughly screened service providers call you back, give you free estimates, and take care of your situation. So it's the fastest going system to find people to take care of your life at the house.
Now, how do people become, how do they get involved? What do they have to do?
All they have to do is either go online to Alcoa, HOCOA.com, put in their request, or they can call us, or they can join us. One of the best parts about what we are, because we're live and we're local, is the fact that we give out huge financial benefits. It's like, would you spend $58 to save hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars? Well, we have all kinds of financial savings on appliances, TVs, mattresses, exercise equipment, outdoor grills, granite countertops, all kinds of countertops, cabinetry, huge savings on flooring. We even have free security systems for people if they want. They do have to pay for the monitoring on that, but they can get probably anywhere from $200 to $300 up to $800 worth of free equipment. We have free prescription cards for people. We just save somebody $400 and some odd dollars on a prescription, 96% of his prescription. He was to pay $416, I think, or $422, and he only had to pay $16 and a fraction. So, and all he did was call, say he wants the cards. We sent him the cards, and boom, saved the money.
How do people?
Well, all it'll take, Mike, is one person, one time having to replace a refrigerator or a major appliance, and they'll love this program.
Yeah, that ain't just awful true. How does someone want to get involved with Alcoa?
Man, we are in the midst of a major expansion, and we give out an awful lot of work. Just imagine every time a person calls and says they want to paint the house, they just hang up the phone. It doesn't even take them 30 seconds, or they go online and put in a request. Then we take their call and give it to one of our thoroughly screened painters, and then the painter takes care of the rest. But we are looking for many, many more service providers take care of the load. So all they have to do, again, is just call or go online, and we'll follow up, and we'll set up a meeting with them, take 10 minutes, and they can be on with us as one of our preferred contractors if they pass the criteria.
Okay, and you say preferred contractor. So what does that mean? Do they go out? I'm the representative from HOCOA?
Yeah, in other words, what they would do is, I don't think we have any problem with telling people that you've used the service. So, for example, when you call in and you just tell us what you want, we give that call to a contractor who has been through an interviewing process. All our leads are qualified to give to the contractors, but all our contractors are truly vetted. I mean, we truly physically meet with each one of them and stay on top with live references that are validated, so that these are not fictitious things that say, and Michael, you know, and I think Thomas knows, we call up and ask, what do you think? And if the reference was no good, we don't give the contractor any more work.
Well, but suppose I'm in Buenos Aires, and I want to open up my own HOCOA. I mean,
we do sell franchises. Again, all they have to do is inquire. We are a fast-growing franchise. We are a very low investment for a high potential gain, so that you don't have to put everything you own on the line. Our business will provide and should provide the opportunity for a low investment and a six-figure plus income with no inventory, no full-time employees, no manufacturing headaches, and we train people before they buy. And we are looking for owners all over the country. And we're now dealing with a veteran who's leaving the Navy, a young lady out in San Diego. She's going to join an existing franchise we already have out there. So that will give us two. We have a disabled vet who owns and has owned a franchise out in Oklahoma City. We're talking to another vet for Huntsville, Alabama. We've got a veteran down in Melbourne, Florida. But you don't have to be a veteran, but we do have wonderful opportunities for veterans coming out of the service so that they can, quite frankly, own a business. They can hold their head high. We're grateful for their service, but they need to have a business. It'll give them an opportunity to make money and be their own boss.
Well, you see now, this would be a franchise business then that someone – so how would they – your company here in Charlotte would be the main company. What would they do for you? I mean, how would they be, what do they do, pay you a fee to have a franchise, buy into the company? How does it work?
They buy their own business. We have a price for the business. It is monitored by federal and state laws. To enable us to qualify to sell the franchises and be a franchise. And they buy it just like they would buy any other business, except when you're buying a franchise, you're buying an existing system. The chances of success of a franchise are far greater than that of a business that somebody has to start on their own. The fact that we take it one step farther and we offer training, full training before purchase with no obligation, so Michael, let's pick on Tom for a minute. If Tom wanted to open up in Montgomery, Alabama, or Asheville, North Carolina, or Greenville, South Carolina, or he wants to open up in Tupelo, Mississippi, or he wants to go up to Boise, Montana, Boise, Idaho. I mean, it doesn't matter.
How about Buenos Aires?
Believe it or not, we have talked to people about taking our franchise overseas. The best part about what we do, because we're live and we're local in that community, there are a tremendous amount of people of foreign origin that are living in those countries that need help trying to find service providers in that country. For example, we're in very strong conversations with somebody in Panama with the canal. They have a huge American or English-speaking population that needs help in trying to locate both for security and for, obviously, quality and for speed and good price. So this would provide them with a number even on a local level in Panama where they call in, tell them what they want, hang up the phone, and then they have the qualified Panamanian contractors calling back.
Hmm. Okay, well, see, that sounds, really good. I mean, I'd like to do Buenos Aires myself. I mean,
well, we can certainly go. I don't think we have a problem telling your wife or my wife that we're leaving on Friday, next Friday, to go to Buenos Aires to check out the market.
I would have to tell her when I was on the plane.
The best part of that story is you can claim it's research.
That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well,
Michael, you could do a broadcast from Buenos Aires.
Well, that would have to be, but I still would have to tell her when I was on the plane, not that I was going to the plane.
We might have to change that theme song to the Ipanema girl.
That's right. No, no, no. Now, you see, this is very important. This is the reason why, I'd always love to talk to you, but I want to understand how franchises work.
I know where you're going with this, so... why don't we just franchises are very controlled businesses, again, that offer a system and rules and regulations that have to be obeyed. I think the one thing that you're talking about or wanting to talk about is a sports franchise that came up with the situation with Mr. Yes. Sterling.
Yes, yeah, yeah, huh? Oops, huh? Well, let me just play you one little bit here, then I want you to commentate on this.
Commissioner now, he has made his way into the room, so Jamel will hold that. Let's go out to the commissioner live now.
For being here, apologize for starting a little bit late. Shortly after the release of an audio recording this past Saturday morning of a conversation that allegedly included Clippers owner Donald Sterling, the NBA commenced an investigation which, among other things, included an interview of Mr. Sterling. That investigation is now complete. The central findings of the investigation are that the man whose voice is heard on the recording and on a second recording from the same conversation that was released on Sunday is Mr. Sterling, and that the hateful opinions voiced by that man are those of Mr. Sterling. The views expressed by Mr. Sterling are deeply offensive and harmful. That they came from an NBA owner only heightens the damage and my personal outrage. Sentiments of this kind are contrary to the principles of inclusion and respect that form the foundation of our diverse, multicultural, and multi-ethnic league. I am personally distraught that the views expressed by Mr. Sterling came from within an institution that has historically taken such a leadership role in matters of race relations and caused current and former players, coaches, fans, and partners of the NBA to question their very association with the league. To them, and pioneers of the game, like Earl Lloyd, Chuck Cooper, Sweetwater Clifton, the great Bill Russell, and particularly Magic Johnson, I apologize. Accordingly, effective immediately, I am banning Mr. Sterling for life from any association with the Clippers organization or the NBA. Mr. Sterling may not attend any NBA games or practices. He may not be present at any Clippers facility, and he may not participate in any business or player personnel decisions involving the team.
Now,
okay.
The connection is the NBA is a franchise. Am I correct?
That is correct. It is a sports franchise that has its own governing rules and regulations that everybody that buys a franchise signs on to uphold, obey, follow, whatever adjective you wish to use or verb you wish to use to go along with how the rules and regulations are carried out. But it specifically spells out everybody's obligation, what the franchise or, in this case, what the NBA is obligated and required to do, as well as what the franchisee is required to do. And the documents for this are generally very, very thick. I mean, it's huge. It's like trying to read an encyclopedia. But there are rules that basically, quite frankly, just cutting to the chase, that basically give the NBA and its commissioner the right to remove anybody that apparently has gone against whatever those regulations are. This is not a matter of whether or not he had the freedom of speech. It's not whether he had that it should, you know, the privacy of his own home. It's not whether or not he's a criminal or whatever, or he's, you know, he's entitled to his own views. What playing public and previous actions all combined have made it so that his apparent being, if you will, has violated the rules. So they are allowed to take the franchise away from him. Now, they have to go through their own due course, as I understand, in their bylaws that say a committee has to review it, which they have done. The committee decided that they want to remove the franchise from him, and then it will now, as I understand it, be put to a vote. And this is in their bylaws. You cannot use outside courts, quite frankly, to challenge it. When Sterling bought the franchise, he agreed to go along with these rules. When Michael Jordan here in Charlotte, Michael Jordan is held to the same standard. If Michael Jordan had committed the offense in a different way or any other thing that would have brought this much attention and I'll call it disrespect or harm to the reputation of the league, then he would be up against the same rules. It's not that they're picking on Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling broke the rules of the internal organization. That's it. There is no recourse. They have the right.
And the thing is that, you know, he brought disrespect to all the other 29 teams.
Yeah, he's hurt the image of the franchise.
So he's hurt the image of the franchise. So if someone, Brent Cyres, and I'm selling drugs out of the Alcoa franchise I have in Buenos Aires,
yeah, then
you're going to revoke it. Right. Am I right?
Yeah, that is correct. You know the rules when you buy it. If you break the rules, you are held accountable. You are held more accountable in a franchising opportunity, a franchising business, than you probably are held out in the real world. The franchise, be it in regular business or in sports, encapsulates its own governing body and rules that have to be obeyed. Now, when these rules are put together, they obviously take into account other laws and everything else. I mean, you just can't. So the rules do qualify and have been examined, if you will, to represent a sports franchise. So again, they really don't have a choice. They have to uphold their rules, or anybody in the franchise can do it. And then they would really have a problem, because then you have the exceptions. Now you have, if Donald Sterling can do it, then Michael Jordan can do it. If Michael Jordan can do it, then Trump can do it. If Trump can do it, then somebody else can do it. They have to uphold the rules and regulations that are their bylaws that have to be obeyed.
Okay, so what you're actually saying is then that he can go to court all he wants, but
that's
the court
correct.
Has not anything to say about it.
No,
and you want to affect, look, we live in a very litigious society. He can sue all he wants, but the rule, it's very explicit, very plain, that as long as the NBA is abiding by their rules and regulations on how to handle the termination of his franchise or removing him from the game, then they're well within their bounds. And there isn't right. anything or any court that can do anything about it.
Right.
It's over. It's over.
So it's just over. And then they can also say, because now there's murmurings that the wife says, well, I want to take over. They can demand, no, we'll name who's going to take over, not you.
The only thing I would have to say in that is that we, you and me and Thomas and everybody else, we don't have a chance to see what the documents for the rules and regulations are in the event that there are other partners involved in the business, even if it is his wife. So we don't know if she is a financial partner. We don't know if she's just there because of an inheritance or a situation. I don't know, and I don't think any of us really know, except those people who are of legal bounds.
She's not there for her good looks. So anyway, but the thing is that, well, that's what I want to know. And see, that's why I knew this would be a great tie-in for you to give us this information.
Oh, I think you're well, and I really do appreciate it. Look, the NBA, once they really put it all together and became that strong of a franchise, and the more they uphold their rules, the stronger the franchise gets, the more people have respect for it, and the more people will invest in not only ownership but in participation and everything else. The only thing I don't think they can do, and I think they didn't word it very nicely, is where they said he couldn't go to a basketball game. I think it's only associated with the Clippers. I don't know if you can keep a guy from going to a basketball game if he was in Charlotte.
I don't know what basketball franchise would want him in the arena.
Well, the thing is, I agree with his statement. That is, I think, you can't bar someone from, you know.
He can buy a general admission ticket,
but
he ain't going to be sitting on the sideline.
Correct. I think what they're saying is, and Thomas is echoing it, that you can't, he is not allowed to participate in any program or anything having to do NBA as a business.
Right.
Or promotion.
Well, it'd be the same thing that they did to Pete Rose, and the same thing they did with the old owners of the Los Angeles Dodgers. They said, you got to get out of here. Goodbye. You know, they're franchise too. So, you know.
But the thing is, with these franchises and what he, Mr. Madden, alluded to just a minute ago was absolutely correct. Franchises live or die on their reputation.
That's right.
And if their reputation is hit, they go to business.
Well,
nobody wants to invest in it. Like if you have this, if suddenly McDonald's has all of their food is bad, makes everybody sick, all of their managers are, racist pigs and rip you off at the door, no one's going to go in again. And their business collapses overnight. Whereas if they keep their image up and constantly make money and people want to go there, they expand. They build new businesses.
Yep.
They get new franchises all the time.
Go ahead.
It's all of your image. And that's
right. It's quality control. It's quality control and maintaining the validity, the quality of not only the logo, but of the product that is being served. They're not all McDonald's, especially the same way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Madden, for straightening us out today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you all.
And, hey, when you're ready to go to Buenos Aires,
just remember,
just call me on my cell phone, not the home phone, because I got a plan for that.
They want me to run for mayor. They want me to run for mayor of Buenos Aires.
Hey, I'll come down there. I'll be your campaign manager.
I bought two tickets from Patrick Cannon's campaign fund.
No. Oh, well.
Oh,
well. I think you're going to be on your own.
Everybody get a free orange suit.
Okay.
And that's another show. That is another show.
Another show. That's
wow.
Right.
Yep.
Y'all have a blessed night. Take care.
Okay.
Yeah, take care.
Talk to you. Very good. All right. All right, great.
The following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
There he goes. And we have two guests on the line here. Mr. David Adams, how are you, sir? I'm sorry.
Michael, always a pleasure, my friend. Thomas, how are you this evening?
Very good, sir.
And I also have the chairperson of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party and the person who's running against some moron named Jeta for District 92 in Huntersville, Mr. Robert Rockridge.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Thomas. Hi, Mike.
Mike says things like moron.
No, hey, listen.
Just
when you're a moron, you're a moron. Whoa, what can I say? We're going to talk about some morons, but we're not going to talk about Franklin County yet. But David's going to fill us in on that.
That's a whole kind of billboard.
That's another story, and we have some news that David's going to fill us in a minute. But David, hold on 1 minute. I need to get a hold of Robin because I know she's busy. You got to get out of here. Robin, tell us, what's the story with District 92?
District 92 covers Lake Wylie to Lake Norman on the west corridor circling the airport. And it's a new district. It was created by the Republicans in 2012 as a swing. And it's going to swing Democratic this time.
Well, there's this guy named Charles Jeta, no relation to Mr. Jeta for the New York Yankees, but this guy is now the district representative from Huntersville. Is that correct?
Yes, he's a resident of Huntersville, and he's the representative for District 92.
And he was elected because he said that he was a mild-mannered.
The word Republican. He used is he was a moderate Republican.
Oh, is that what it is? Not mild-mannered, but moderate. Oh, okay. All right.
Moderate.
Well, let's just see some of the things that he did as a moderate Republican. Oh, there's a bill called HB 589 that is it's called the Act to Restore Confidence in Government by establishing a Voter Information Verification Act to promote the electoral process through education, increased registration of voters by requiring voters to provide photo identification before voting to protect their rights, each registered voter to cast a secure vote in a reasonable, secure way. And this measure would confirm voter identification as accurately as possible. Now, why after 1,000 years, well, let's not say that, 200 years of our Constitution, where everyone had the right to vote, how many illegal or crummy votes do you know of, Ms. Bradford, in Huntersville?
Well, Huntersville or even the state of North Carolina, it's 0.001%, which amounts to virtually no voter fraud.
Right.
So
it's a voter suppression bill. It's after the windfall of President Obama, they wanted to make sure that they suppressed the vote by disenfranchising your senior population and your college students, and that's what it's geared against.
They want to protect your votes. They take it away from you, and they put it up on the shelf.
Because they'll save it.
Yeah, they're going to protect
They'll save it, right.
You can't use it.
Okay.
So that way it won't ever be.
Now, there was also another bill called SB 353, which prohibited abortion coverages on the state health insurance exchange and prohibits sex-selective abortions. Oh, so we are now doing sex-selective abortions? When did we start doing this?
Right after Mao Zedong took over, if you remember during the communist.
Right, to control the population. But it was tied, if that's the same bill, it was tied with the motorcycle bill for it to get passed.
I didn't get there yet.
I'm sorry.
And it increased fees for unsafe movements by drivers that threatens the property and safety of motorcyclists.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. Oh, what has a motorcycle got to do with sex-selective abortion?
Haven't you seen those movies from the 60s? Motorcycle gangs come in, ravage town.
Oh, right.
That's what causes all
this.
You got to make the connection.
Okay, so this is this guy, Jeter. This is one of the there's got one more here. He also, an act which is called SB 132, an act to include instruction in the school health education program of the preventable causes of preterm birth, including induced abortion as a cause of preterm birth in subsequent pregnancies, and to provide such information to charter and non-public and homeschool students. Now, wait a minute. I thought that these right-wing nut jobs didn't want the government dictating to us, to our children, about health care and about pregnancy. So now they put through a bill that's going to tell students in schools about...
Only in homeschool and public schools.
Oh yeah, right. Okay.
So only select people.
Oh.
Big government.
Right. For the people who have decided that, for whatever reason, traditional schools do not work for their children, and they like to have them in a controlled environment for the betterment of their education, are only subject to enforce these rules and understand why it's important to be able to live under the government's thumb in controlling your body and your sexuality and your sex.
But wait a minute, but aren't they saying that that's what Obamacare does?
They're saying a lot of things that's contradictory, but they're counting on the American citizen to not be able to read and understand what's behind the whole process. And that's
There's a lot of American citizens who can't read and understand, and they all listen to Fox News.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's neither here nor there. The problem is, who the hell would go for it? Why would you want to send your child to a charter school when they're now teaching them about the birds and the bees?
Well, I can't speak for other parents, but, you know, the argument back is we want a choice and we want to make sure that our child is getting the right education, and the only way to do that is to do a homeschool or a charter school. But, you know, this is North Carolina, and with this new General Assembly, who was elected in between 2010 and 2012, they're the supermajority, and they have taken government to a regressive stage back 100 years. And they want to continue to do that, to disenfranchise everyone who do not appear to agree or look like them. But
well,
I want to thank you, Michael, I want to thank you for having the voice talk about this because, like we both stated, a lot of people don't take the time to read, but they do listen to the radio and to the television. So thank you for making sure that people understand, you know, hey, there's no such thing as a moderate Republican. It's like a unicorn. Have you seen one lately?
Hey, it's not, listen, I'd like to see a unicorn before I see another moderate Republican. The problem is, now see, David, you're in Pennsylvania, and that nut job who's the governor in Pennsylvania, who's just like the rest of the nut jobs, but he was one of the ones that started this whole mess. Is he going to get reelected again?
Which guy are you talking about, Michael?
Governor of Pennsylvania.
Of Pennsylvania? No, I doubt it. I doubt it very seriously. But, again, like the young lady just said, you know, Pennsylvania is also one of those states where, you know, their General Assembly has enacted laws that are regressive and that have set, you know, that state back post-civil rights era. So, you know, I doubt it very seriously. But, again, you know, what you guys talk about here all the time, you have to get people out to the polls. Okay, you have to get Democrats out to the polls to vote. Hopefully, this guy won't be around. I don't think so, based on some of the things that have occurred, like the situation with the judges selling the kids to the prison system, things like that. You know, I'm just hoping that they'll be able to get people out come election time.
Well, now Philadelphia is the stronghold to get out the vote in Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and I think there's another town. I can't quite think of the name, but there are three towns that are for the most part, strong Democratic affiliation in terms of. And then again, you know, you have to get somebody who can run against this guy. I'm not familiar with the candidates that are running for the Democratic Party in that particular state. But you're right, Michael. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and then there's another town, I'm not quite sure what it is, that's the strongholds in terms of Democratic votes.
Now, Robin, well, what has been the fallout of the primary election here in Mecklenburg County last week, this week?
Well, when you say fallout, Mike, what exactly do you mean?
Well, here's what I mean. I am so sick and tired of voting for people who should not even be elected dog catcher. I'm tired of it. I mean, you know, and the problem is because people don't give a damn. They wake up in the morning and they say, oh, gee whiz. Let me pick my nose. Oh, I'm going to run for mayor. I mean, this is ludicrous. There needs to be some sort of format for you to go and ask the Democratic Party, I would like to run. And they in turn ask you, what are your qualifications? And you say, I'm a citizen. No, that is not good enough. I'm sorry.
Which meetings have you been attending for the last 5 years?
Yes, well, that's true.
Yeah, I will put my Democratic Chair's hat on and say that I would like to congratulate all the winners and the ones who didn't win for participating in the process and moving to the next level or showing a desire to run.
Oh,
you have to understand, this is a democracy. This is a democracy.
Yes.
And whether
right.
we as personal people prefer or don't, the person who won. As a good Democrat, we need to support our candidates in the primary across the board. That's why we don't hand out a voter's guide during the primary because the party supports all the candidates. Should people be better prepared to run for office and understand the demand behind being a representative for that seat? Yes. Should people do their due diligence as a candidate on the issues and talking to constituents of that area? Yes. Do they all do it? No. But those are the tools that you really need. You know, but if you feel wholeheartedly that you're not being represented the right way and you feel that you can do a better job All I ask as chair and a voter is for you to do your due diligence and be able to come up with a message that speaks to what really needs to be done and corrected and run that and run for that office.
I was just passed by an unbiased bystander that says the main way we decide voters is who do you want to have a beer with? And it should not be. This is not Robin Bradford, chairman of the Democratic Party, speaking. This is Michael Lawson, who thinks that half the people in office now need to go back home and get the hell out of the way because they ain't doing a damn thing but screwing up the mess that we already have.
Well, Michael, at our Democratic meetings, I always state that if you choose to vote a person in based on friendship or name recognition and they do not perform in the manner necessary to make sure that it's for the betterment of the community, we need to hold those people accountable, and if they can't do the job, we need to vote them out.
We need a
You
payment.
Can't – well, you can't do that. This is not China. It's America.
Oh.
But
–
You can't do it publicly, but what I try to do as chair of the party is to hold town hall meetings so the constituents can ask those critical questions of the elected officials, and hopefully the elected official will either answer in a correct manner to justify why they did or did not do what they were supposed to, and understand how important it is to be in touch with the community and have those regular conversations. And I've taken a lot of flack. Wait a minute. I've taken a lot of flack from elected officials over the year. And why are you doing this? We're just coming in to give a report and we can't stay long. No, you have to stay long. You have to be able to talk about what you've done, what you haven't done, and we need to move forward with or without you. If you can't do the job, make that your last term, and let's work with someone who can do the job. And, you know, when I'm elected in November, I want you to hold my feet to the fire. I want you to say, Robin, was there a reason why you voted that way? And I need to be prepared to give you an answer whether it's popular or not. But too many people here, and I'll speak for Mecklenburg County, have ran for office, got elected because of name recognition for whatever purpose, or a person you want to have a beer with, and have yet to step up to the plate to make a difference in this community.
Well, you know, the one thing, the main thing I hear from every single constituent is, I elected them, and I never saw them again until it was time for another election.
And that's wrong. That's totally wrong.
You cannot
represent your constituent base if you're not in touch. You cannot advocate for your constituent base if you're not in touch. And that's what I say all the time. You need to come back and have town hall meetings. You need to meet with your precinct chairs. You need to have these type of conversations, good, bad, or indifferent. Don't come to me 5-6 months before it's time to run and act like you've done all these great things in a year and a half and you didn't do anything. And don't tell me because the Republicans have a supermajority, it really doesn't make any difference for me to go up there and vote. You know, and because I'm not going to have the vote. But you can rise to stand on the floor, be recognized, and state your point whether you're going to get a majority vote or not.
And, I know we got a couple more minutes before I get to David, but one of the main things that I would say, and I keep getting this flack, well, you need to go back to New York. Listen, I tell you what, right now, we didn't get anybody where I lived who didn't come back or send a representative once a month to the Democratic Club and give a report live. If you didn't, you did not get any money and no votes in the next election. But today, every, well, you know, and the thing is, what's really bad about it is that these people don't get paid, Jack. They have to work another job. They don't get paid, so they want to do it because they think it's a part-time job. You can't do this. This is a full-time job. This is not a part-time job. And if you're 100 years old, and if you're 70 years old, you don't be traveling from here to freaking Raleigh back and forth because you can't do it.
Well, I agree with you. If you're going to run for office, you need to understand that it might be labeled part-time, it might, and you receive stipends, but at the end of the day, did you run to advance your ego? Did you run to advance pocket money? No, I want to believe that you ran to make a difference and for our constituent base to be heard. That's the reason why I'm running. I'm not running for prestige or anything like that. I've already lost two races, but I've never left my activism. I'm always visible with the party and in the public, whether I agree with the stance the party is taking or not. You're going to hear my voice because I am an activist. I'm a grassroots, and I'm not from here. People tell me to go back to New York, but I'm not going back to New York. I'm here to stay as long as my husband wants to stay here. But at the end of the day, yes, to a certain degree, I do agree with you in reference to candidates is running to run. If you want to run a race, sign up for a 5K. If you want to represent people and do the right thing for this community and this state, then you need to work actively, and that's not on a part-time basis. That's a full-time basis with overtime.
Yeah, well, if you're going to run a 5K, you can't get up in the morning and say, I'm running a 5K today. You did prepare.
Yeah, you
have to change. Exactly.
That's the problem, Mike. See? And I'll put on my southernism here.
Y'all
are from up north. You see, and all this, this active stuff, this busyness about you.
Oh, yeah.
You need to learn to relax and sit back. That's why things are always changing.
Right.
Everything's changing. We don't like that down
right.
here.
No.
That's the same way it was with my granddaddy, my parents.
That's right.
It should be that way forever.
That's
so
right.
Why are you coming
right.
down
here? Ever. That's right.
Well, you know what, Tom? It can't be that way forever because now we're back to regressive government. And if you want to be able to keep a roof over your head, feed and educate your children, you have to be on a progressive step. If you're not on a progressive step, your children will not be educated, you will lose your home, and you will go hungry. And that's why these Republicans are making sure that everybody and their mother has a right to carry a gun because it's going to go to the Old West, and people are going to be shooting people for basic necessities. And we have to put our foot down. And if 2014, this November, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or anything in the middle, if you don't get out and vote the right way and stop voting against your own interests, you're going to hell in a handbag. And you can drink your iced tea as sweet as you want to, but it's going to be no more sugar for your damn tea. So let's do what we need to do, regardless of what party affiliation. Republicans have done. Let's stop.
As long as I have some gray goose in the iced tea, it's all right.
I'm making up posters right now. I got the new Robin poster.
That's right.
And no more sugar for your damn tea.
Okay, Tom, make sure you send me a copy so I can put them out here in Huntersville.
Okay, I want to thank you, Ms. Robin Bradford, who's running for District 92 against that IT drinking numbnut, Charles Jeter. No relation, Mr. Jeter, on the Yankees. Okay,
not
Robin,
at all.
Thank you.
Take care. And have a great Mother's Day, everybody.
That's you need to get a hold of me. We need to talk about what we're going to do in August.
Okay, let's talk.
Right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Mr. David Adams, what's up?
Yeah, well, I was listening to this young lady's seat down there. It sounds very interesting. Hopefully she's going to have some supporters down in that region. She sounds like a very strong candidate, someone's going to be proactive an office that's going to represent our constituency well. You know, Michael, I've been following this this sheriff race down in Franklin County very closely. Unfortunately, I'm sad to report, I'm quite sure you're already aware, that Sheriff Jerry Jones won the Republican nomination by 55% of the vote down that way. Other gentleman, the Democratic candidate, Mr. Kent Winstead, won the Democratic nomination. He won that by roughly 45% of the vote. And the only good part of it is that Winstead got more votes than Jerry Jones, got roughly almost 1,100 more votes than Jerry Jones. So it seems like if Jones is going to win it, he's going to have to convert some Democrats to get that seat back. So that was a good thing to hear, to see that. But I was hoping that he would be unseated as the Republican nomination for that particular chair.
But you never know when his nephew might show up in the middle of the night.
Right.
You're right about that one, Thomas.
I've never been scared of anything in North Carolina because I came from Mississippi. I know real adversity, but this town scares me. Oh, man.
Tell us, well, what's new with Shannon Namodi?
Well, Michael, there's some positive things that are going on that I don't want to get too much detail about. On the air right now because it's happening as we speak, and I don't want any listeners that may be involved in that foolishness down there to be preempt anything that we're doing. Hopefully within the next couple of days, I will be able to provide evidence that clearly demonstrates that this kid was set up. Okay, so I don't want to get too much, like I said, into the details of that, but there is, I said this months ago when we started talking about this young man's case, that there was evidence that clearly demonstrated that this kid was set up, and I'm about to get my hands on hopefully within the next 48 hours or so.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Well, that's really great. That's really great. And
Every
how
day is more hopeful now.
How is Elizabeth Crudit, Shannon's mother, holding up?
Well, she's very excited about some of the things that are going on. The fact that the kid was transferred out of Franklin County into Nash County has been a blessing. He's been able to call and contact her on the phone. She'll be going in to see him, I guess, again this week to visit him. He's been able to talk to his dad, his sister, his younger brother. None of these things had transpired for him when he was in Franklin, being detained in Franklin County. It's a whole new ball of wax up there. The mother reported to me today that the folks up in the correctional officials, at least up in Nash County, appear to be strictly business and very professional. So he's been afforded the same kinds of privileges that any other detainee has been given.
That's great. That is very good. Very good. And you see, I guess Jerry Jones so busy trying to win his thing, he didn't know what the hell happened to him, huh? Is that what happened?
Well, you know, Michael, I'm very skeptical. I know you and I and Beth had talked about this the other day about possible scenarios of what transpired because based on the evidence that myself and other bloggers have put out there, clearly there was no case against this young man from the very start, and there have been other lawyers and attorneys in the law field who've looked at some of the official records in the case and said that the arrest warrant should have never been issued for this kid. And Jerry Jones knows this. The prosecutors know this, okay? And I'm just concerned that they know that they muffed this one, and why let him go now, okay? You know, they've done everything they can to keep him away from his family, you know, by keeping him in isolation, not allowing him to make phone calls, not allowing him to have visits and everything. I'm just very concerned of this newfound compassion for this young man who's been in segregation or solitary confinement for over a year that they suddenly let him go, okay, and give him the freedoms now. So I don't know whether this is something that came to transpire through the Attorney General's office or whether this is something that was done by the folks down there in Franklin County. Obviously, it wasn't something that was brokered, some kind of deal that was brokered with the sheriff down there in Nash County because he's out sick, he had a heart attack. So I'm just very optimistic, about, him, being able to get his evidence out there to prove himself. But I'm very concerned as to why those officials down in Franklin County were so eager, to let him, out of that facility, based on the way they treated him.
Well, to be honest, I think that one of the key factors here is exposure, just by turning attention onto these people. They disappeared this morning, basically, is what they did. They put him in a non-official status. He was sitting in a cell. There was no charges against him. There's no trial. There's no, there was no nothing. He's just sitting there in limbo. And when someone noticed and you started bringing attention, and then the spotlight begins to be turned on. That's, again, that's what, we talked about this before. Roaches, run from light. And that's what this county's doing now. They're scrambling, trying to cover their ass because there's an election going on and the spotlight's on. So I think they're just trying to clean up and do damage control. That's all they're doing. But what I'm extremely hopeful for is what I was scared of is when he was in the hole. One way of taking care of the problem is to eliminate the problem.
Mm.
And that was what I was worried about. Now that there's enough attention, enough spotlight on it, and he has been let go, I am much more hopeful. And I think he's got a great chance for a complete, a victory in this, in getting out and everything. But I was worried that they would take the much harsher route and just, eliminate him. And that was my fear. So I'm very glad, and I just think if you keep the spotlight on them, all of this will continue to be taken care of, so to speak, in a legal, above-board way, because they can't do what they were doing now.
Yeah, well Mike, Thomas, he still doesn't have a court date. He still doesn't have any court. He's still just being detained in infinity, okay? There is no court date in the system. We were told, his mother was told that he was supposed to have a writ hearing on the 5th. Which was just past Monday. Okay, that never transpired. She did speak with him. The mother and his parents went to the courthouse, and there was nothing. Shannon was never brought in. They stayed there the entire day for the entire docket, and Shannon was never brought in. Shannon wasn't even transported out of the Nass County Jail to a courthouse in Nass County or Franklin County. So I don't know why the parents were told that. They were told initially that he had a writ hearing. Okay, again, they're playing games, and I'm glad that he's not under the horrific conditions that he was being held in Franklin County. But I believe you may have tapped on something there, Thomas. I believe that because there's election going on, folks are trying to clean up their act just for cosmetic purposes. Okay, if the kid's not in their jail, then you can't say that, we're doing this to him or we're doing that to him. Again, that favors Jerry Jones' chances of being reelected. However, from what I'm told from the documents that I'm going to get my hands on, I earnestly believe that the FBI should conduct an investigation into this case, and if not, criminal charges should be brought against the Franklin County Sheriff Jerry Jones, as well as the district attorney in that county. Okay, like I said, I can't speak, on the specifics of the documents, but if they are true to form, based on what I'm told I'm going to be getting, I'm looking forward to some criminal charges to be filed in this case for Franklin County officials related to the Shannon Amodi criminal case.
What about the judges?
Well, that's the other thing, too. The judges should be responsible, too, because what it looks like judges and folks have just signed off on documents under the auspices that, this is what the kid did, this is the evidence that we had, okay, he signed off on it, he signed off on the warrants, he signed off on the charges and the indictment, but, when it came time to produce the evidence, it's non-existent. Okay, so now they're all gas-faced, trying to cover themselves because they know, like I said, they muffed it. I think that's a practice down there where folks are just signing off on documents because, when you have people that have been in office and working in tight reins like this in the criminal justice system down there for so long, You know, there's a certain professional courtesy that's afforded to prosecutors, the sheriffs, and the police officials who bring charges against criminals or suspects, you know. It's just a culture down there. You know, folks are just signing off on stuff without actually doing their job, you know, giving it due diligence, you know, actually seeing what you have. Because based on everything that we've provided so far in the media, it's nowhere in the world the DA should have ever brought charges against this kid. And there's one document that's already out there, and that's that Facebook search warrant document that shows that the alleged CI statements were false, that he had in fact lied to the cops. And then a cop who actually conducted the investigation of that part of the case and also conducted the Facebook search warrant, he didn't even submit the affidavit until 90 days later. Okay? Now, if the DA had saw that, I'm almost certain that he would have been compelled not to press charges against this kid because their theory that he had conspired with the victim's daughter to kill her and rob her is non-existent. You know, because their theory has always been that he conspired with her and there were text messages on Facebook. Okay? That was shot down in this document. There were no records discovered, no records seized. So that means that Shannon Amodi had no communication with the victim's daughter, nor the alleged CI, you know, as it had been previously alleged.
What about the Facebook picture with the CI with all the money and making claims that, hey, they ain't never going to get me?
Well, here's the thing. You know, that's out there. You know, we've put that out there. Again, folks down that way are saying that guy is related to Sheriff Jerry Jones. I've been searching high and low to try to substantiate that, to connect the dots. So far, I haven't been able to do so. But, again, Michael, you know, when they conducted a Facebook search warrant, they know who the girl was. If she was conspiring on Facebook with somebody to kill her mother, they know who it is. They already saw it, okay? But it wasn't Senator Modi.
Right.
You know? And like I said in several blog articles, once they found out that the alleged CI statements were false, that he did not exchange text messages with Shannon, and the victim's daughter didn't exchange text messages with him, then, you know, that whole theory was shot down. So why was he even arrested?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is really unbelievable, but so you're going to be getting some information this weekend, you think, right?
Yeah, hopefully within the next 48 to 72 hours, by Tuesday morning at the latest, I'm hopeful that I'm going to have some documents in my hand that's going to really blow this case wide open, okay? And
I want you to come back next week and give us that good information.
And yeah, definitely.
Well,
from what I'm hearing, Michael, the information is going to be such a bombshell. You might even want to run a special show for the documents.
Well, if you do that, if it's that much of a bombshell, we'll do a special report. I can go any day of the week. I don't need to go on Friday. We'll do it before Friday.
Right. It's crucial. It's going to just really shed some light on the shenanigans that are going on down there in the DA's office and in the sheriff's office, as well as some of those judges that were assigned to that part of the district during the time this kid was arrested.
Well, I like that, David. I think this is I hope this seems to be good news. This seems to be good news.
I think they were always just busy putting up those billboards, the Klan billboards.
Right.
So they didn't have time to use it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. I tell you, that's something else up there. And what is that, Johnston County? Oh, man, that sign is still there.
It's just amazing to me that this is in modern times this is happening.
Oh, give me a break. Well, I want to thank you, David. And I'll be speaking to you this weekend. You give me a call if you find out anything breaks. And we will be back. You call in same time, same bat station next week or before.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Will do, Michael.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you, Thomas.
And tell us your blog site again so people can look for it.
Okay, that's thepeopleschampion.me, thepeoples, with an S, champion.me.
That's right, People's Champion, David Adams, out of Pennsylvania. Okay, David, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye. And we are going, I have been inundated with people telling me, hey, they like the music I've been playing, the 60s and 70s music. They want to hear some more. So I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of that music that we grew up with.
I tried
before
to
we leave.
Play the girl from Ipanema earlier.
That's not good music. Hey, this is a song that everybody knows. Chuck Jackson.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then, mama, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day. I'll be all alone. Oh, any day now, when your restless eyes meet someone new, oh, to my sad surprise, tears of blue shadows will fall all over town. Will let me die. Oh, oh, wow, beautiful bird, you will have flown. All alone. I know I shouldn't want to keep you if you don't want to stay until you've gone forever. I'll be home. Begging you to stay any day now. When the clock strikes gold, you'll call it off. And then my tears will flow. Then the blue shadows will fall all over town. Love will let me die, 'cause you won't be around. Don't fly away, my beautiful bird. Don't fly away.
Tighten up. This is the music we tighten up with.
on the drum. Come on now, drummer. What's gonna tighten it up for me now? Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now. Tighten it up. Yeah. Now let that guitar fall in. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on the organ now.
Archie Bell and the Drells. And the Drells, Tighten Up, and Chuck Jackson, my favorite, Any Day Now. Now, I had so many
nice
people
music
asking me that they like to hear the clips that I play because they like the music and they want to hear more of it. So I thought I'd give you a little taste and we'll see how the what reaction we get.
Well, you know what? After getting worked up with all this crazy politics and shenanigans with all the crooks in office, we need a little break.
Right. Because sometimes I feel like shooting somebody with a smart gun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just works like that sometimes. I get worked up.
The problem with that, Mike, is if you had a smart gun, we might be able to track who shot it.
Is that the reason?
Oh,
you mean to tell me then we'd have to then? Why am I not?
So,
you tell me, why am I not registering on here? What's going on here? Why am I frozen? Why is this? I don't know why it's frozen. It's not.
It's a new film by Disney.
Oh, Frozen. It's a new film by Disney. Correct. That's what it is. Oh, now it's working. Anyway.
Perhaps we were on just then, perhaps not. We were just explaining that we were taking a music break.
So we're taking a music break.
We took a breather to get off the screaming of the politics.
That's true.
Because Mike says that sometimes he gets so wound.
I get so wound.
That he would have to use a smart gun.
That's right. I would have to use a smart gun.
So this is the stuff that's been around.
And I don't need a smart gun to shoot myself with.
Well, they've been coming up with it ever since the 80s. They've been talking about, you know, doing something where it was linked to your fingerprint or it had a, you know, they've already got the ones with the safety buttons and things that you have to push to fire. But now they were trying to get something to registered owners.
That's right.
So if you had a gun that was registered, it would be typed to you, either your fingerprint or your DNA or something like that. But now they've got one that's less invasive because some people are like, my DNA.
Now,
this is a smart chip, right?
Global Digital Solutions.
Okay.
But Mauser, I also know, is doing this. So now the thing is, why don't these people want to have these guns? Why is the NRA impressed not to have this done?
You infringe upon Cliven Bundy's right.
Oh, well, why? Cliven Bundy can buy it?
No, but they don't want anything, because the reason is every time it was fired, only that person would fire it. Right?
Okay, but so what?
Yeah, but that would solve every murder in America overnight, and you wouldn't have any of this BS where people just get to shoot people and then...
Wait a minute. So you're trying to tell me that the NRA don't want people, don't want crimes to be solved?
What other...
Well, this is what I'm asking. I don't understand.
What other excuse do you have for blocking smart gun technology? And this technology is non-invasive. It doesn't use, you know, your DNA or your sweat or any of this kind of
stuff. No, this don't.
It's a watch that you wear, has a microchip in it, and the gun has a microchip.
And it also has, in order for the gun to operate, you got to put in the passcode.
Right. So you've got a smart chip, though, that if you're not...
Oh, wait. I just realized, because they're stupid, the people who use guns. They don't know smart from Shinola. They can't use it.
Right.
Oh, now I understand.
No, this is the thing.
Oh.
It is completely linked to you, and you alone can use it. You know, your wife can't pick it up.
Your wife can't
pick it up.
See, you out with another girl, she can't use your gun to shoot you with.
It wouldn't work, right?
Oh.
But there's no, it's 100%, you know, reliable. It's got accountability, but they don't really want that.
They don't want
the industry
that.
Is all about this, you know, the Wild West.
Okay, but I understand it. All right, but so, okay, we don't want to infringe. You can't take my right to have a gun away. All right, so now we don't want to take away your right to have a gun.
Right, we're giving you your right.
We're giving you your gun. You can get as many as you want.
You're
only $1,800, though. You're only $1,800 right now. But what I'm saying, but it'll go down after everybody starts buying them. So... what is the reason now? Oh, by the way, they're more accurate.
Here's the thing. Put on your big tinfoil hat.
Tinfoil hat.
The conspiracy thing is the big government spy masters are going to have your data in a microchip that's on your gun and see everything that you do and everywhere that you go, and every time you shoot it, it's recorded and sent back to the mothership. And then the Greys are going to come visit you at night to do experiments on you. Now, I don't know why, but they are so freakishly paranoid about monitoring and tracking and everything else. When you're talking about putting a smart chip in their gun that will disable it or enable it if your smart chip isn't connected to your other smart chip to make sure it's you, I think that's the problem. They're going to say that the government will have control over your gun. You know, they could maybe remotely disable it or something, or track you all night long. You know, well, who knows? I don't know. They're freaks.
I mean, well, we're going to talk about this next week.
Mm-hmm.
More.
Okay, yeah, this is a big breaking thing. Here's the thing. Since the 80s, they've been kind of toying with this, should we have smart guns or not, and it's been blocked every time by the NRA. But one of the big things here is it's one of the biggest companies in the world, and they are going toward it. And as you said earlier, what? They're actually going toward all the military using these.
Well, yeah. The Mauser, I think, is the one who first came out with it. And Mauser said that they're looking for NATO and the military to buy it. Nobody buys more guns than the military.
Well, you know,
and if the military buys it, these people can kiss it goodbye.
Well, yeah. And look, there was a while back, there was a movement to, you know, we have barcodes on everything, every product. Barcode, you just scan the barcode and you can buy your movie and your book and your record player, and, you know, whatever. They were going to put codes on bullets and stuff like that. So when you bought a lot, you know, you had them registered to you.
Right.
And then when someone shot, you know, they found said bullet in murder victim, they go, oh, look there, that's Mike Lawson's right there, registered right to him. Well, they went over that and said, oh, no, you can't do that. They can't do, you know. Again, why not?
It's just because they don't want you registered either. They don't want guns registered.
But it would solve all kinds of things. Like, for instance, not to use a bad, you know,
example, but if you're in a war and you had, you know, access,
friendly fire?
Yeah, friendly fire would be instantly explainable, and you wouldn't be able to have a parade for, you know, somebody dying from in battle and then later it come out that it was all friendly fire, for instance. But you would know immediately because you could see where the bullet came from, if it was American or not, and this, that, and the other. But that would solve so much, and it would end all this speculation and this, you know, unsolved crimes, because you would have a bullet registered, you'd have a gun that could only be fired by you. It would kind of narrow it right down. You'd have a suspect list of one. You know?
As a matter of fact, New Jersey passed a law requiring that within 3 years of smart gun being sold anywhere in the United States, only smart guns would be sold in New Jersey.
The entire state, in this, anywhere in the United States, if they sell one of these, within 3 years, their entire state is smart gun only. So that's incredible. This will be a game changer. And I think one of the big things you're going to talk about next
week. In Massachusetts, John F. Kearney has also introduced a similar mandate. So we're going to be talking about this. Next week, we're going to get some more things. If you want, you want to check out Chris Hayes on MSNBC. He has done 4 shows on this so far already.
Yeah.
So
Global Digital Solutions, look into their smart gun technology, because it's a little bit different than the other ones that have come in the past. So it's a new technology, nifty, and the neat game changer here is these are major gun manufacturers that are getting behind this. They're talking about using it on an international scale, and they're talking about buying American gun companies.
Absolutely. They need to buy that daggone Remington.
Yeah, somebody
Forget it. Somebody
needs to buy the NRA.
Well, I'm sure they're, you know, for the price, you know, they'd sell their mother. So, hey, you know, what are we talking about? I don't think that's too far-fetched. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. It's getting awful dark out here. Look, it's going to pour and rain any second. The wind is coming up, and we're out of here. It's been a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day, mommies.
I think I'm going to wear my black crown.
That's right.
The door.
Well, all right.